Albert Pike joined the Fraternal Independent Order of Odd Fellows in 1840. By 1859, he was elected Sovereign Grand Commander of the Scottish Rite's Southern Jurisdiction and remained Sovereign Grand Commander for the rest of his life. He was definitely aware of Zionism, and if this Illuminati plan is true, then his use of the word Nazi is plausible. Either way, the letter is worth a read, and the closer we get to the end game, the more accurate this letter appears to be.
Albert Pike served as a brigadier general in the Confederate Army. Following the war, Pike was jailed for treason. He was quickly pardoned by a fellow Freemason, President Andrew Johnson. Among eventually becoming a 33-degree Mason and a top leader of the Ku Klux Klan, Pike was also believed to be a Luciferian. He claimed he was able to summon Lucifer at will as the Grand Master of the Order of the Palladium. Palladism, or traditional Satanism, an ancient Luciferian cult, was then introduced to the inner circle of the Masonic lodges. This influence has flourished into modern-day Freemasonry in the super rites of the upper degrees. Industry, entertainment, the CIA, Congress, and our military leaders are inundated with Freemasonic Palladism, or a Luciferian New World Order. What follows are the chilling predictions, or better yet, instructions of Albert Pike's three world wars, funded in great part by the House of Rothschild. From a letter that he wrote to 33-degree Italian Illuminati head and mafia founder Giuseppe Mazzini, dated August 15, 1871. The First World War must be brought about in order to permit the Illuminati to overthrow the power of the Tsars in Russia and of making that country a fortress of atheistic communism. The divergences caused by the agenteurs of the Illuminati between the British and Germanic empires will be used to foment this war. At the end of the war, communism will be built and used in order to destroy the other governments, in order to weaken the religions. The Second World War must be fomented by taking advantage of the differences between the fascists and the political Zionists. This war must be brought about so that Nazism is destroyed and that the political Zionism be strong enough to institute a sovereign state of Israel in Palestine. During the Second World War, international communism must become strong enough in order to balance Christendom, which would be then restrained and held in check until the time when we would need it for the final social cataclysm. The Third World War must be fomented by taking advantage of the differences caused by the agenteur of the Illuminati between the political Zionists and the leaders of the Islamic world. The war must be conducted in such a way that Islam, the Muslim Arabic world, and political Zionism, the State of Israel, mutually destroy each other. Meanwhile, the other nations, once more divided on this issue, will be constrained to fight to the point of complete physical, moral, spiritual, and economical exhaustion. We shall unleash the nihilists and the atheists, and we shall provoke a formidable social cataclysm which in all its horror will show clearly to the nations the effect of absolute atheism, origin of savagery and of the most bloody turmoil. Then, everywhere, the citizens obliged to defend themselves against the world minority of revolutionaries will exterminate those destroyers of civilization and the multitude, disillusioned with Christianity, whose deistic spirits will from that moment be without compass or direction, anxious for an ideal, but without knowing where to render its adoration, will receive the true light through the universal manifestation of the pure doctrine of Lucifer, brought finally out in the public view. This manifestation will result from the general reactionary movement, which will follow the destruction of Christianity and atheism, both conquered and exterminated at the same time. A bizarre letter indeed. And a red flag may have gone off when you heard the term Nazism, but the term Nazism was known to those in the Illuminati at that time. Will we allow this madness to unfurl unabated, or will we put a halt to it before it's too late? In February of 2025, researchers from the Cafre Research Project, including Dr. Nicole Ciccolo, Professor Filippo Biondi.
All right, folks, it's the War Room. Stay with us. We'll join you live on the other side of Indian Force headquarters. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Well, 48 hours ago, our sponsor, Bigly, launched Alex Jones app. Go to alexjonesapp.com and go right to the Apple Store. It's number one in the world in news, surpassing X, and is racing into the top 100 of total apps in the world. Great job, everybody. This is a real shot across the bow for the censors. That is a big deal. I mean, we're ahead of Disney. We're ahead of Uber. We're ahead of everything. We're ahead of X. Number one in news in the world. Takes years to do that with an app. We've been number one before when they banned us in 2018. That took 5-6 years to get to that. Number one in 48 hours. Incredible job. Keep sharing the feed. You can't search it. They don't let you search the app, which every other app you can find. But you just go to alexjonesapp.com, and that takes you right to the subpage of the Apple Store. It's totally free. Right there, alexjonesapp.com.
Peeling back the layers of the day's events to reveal the core truth. War Room with Harrison Smith. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the War Room, coming to you live this Friday afternoon from the InfoWars headquarters here in Austin, Texas. By the way, congratulations and thank you to everybody who downloaded the Alex Jones Network app, AJN Live. You can go to alexjonesapp.com and it'll leave you, take you straight to the Apple App Store where you can download it yourself. And we are now number one in the news category for apps across the entire Apple App Store platform. So we dominate once again. It took us about 24 hours. But we are on top. AlexJonesApp.com. Join the movement. Join the phenomenon. Number one worldwide in all apps having to do with news. We knocked X out of the top spot. I say this for a couple reasons. One, I'm bragging. For one thing, this is just pure, unadulterated bragging. I love it. And take that, enemies. Take that, people who thought InfoWars would be down and out. We are number one in the news category on the App Store. So, obviously, first and foremost is simply the self-congratulations and really the thanks to the audience for downloading it and supporting us and being so responsive in these times of troubles that we find ourselves. So that's obvious. I'm not going to lie about that. We're patting ourselves on the back a little bit. But it's more than just bragging. It's pointing out that there is nothing like InfoWars. There is no organization like InfoWars. We are so far above and beyond anything even remotely comparable to us. It's good to have a reminder of that every once in a while, because sometimes on X or elsewhere on the internet, you can get this impression that Alex is just another one of the voices. There's lots of dissident voices out there these days, and Alex Jones is one of them certainly, but there are others as well. And it's like, that's not reality. No, the reality is, there's Alex Jones and InfoWars as the peak of the peak, the pinnacle of what dissident media is. I mean, Alex created it, basically. And then there's everybody else. And again, I'm not saying this in a braggadocious way. I'm saying this in a purely just factual way. InfoWars is unlike anything that's ever come before and likely anything that will ever come after. We are so powerful. I mean, the reason they're attacking us is because of our power. Again, we've talked about it over and over. Throughout the trial, they made a point of reemphasizing just how impactful InfoWars was, just how ahead of the curve, just how, you know, responsible Alex Jones was in shaping the conversation of all of America. And of course, getting Donald Trump elected and therefore changing the course of not just America, but world history in total. So there's a reason why we maybe talk about ourselves more than other places. Although I don't even think that's true. Honestly, we should be talking about ourselves more. It's because this place is something special, and it's not because of us. It's because of you. It's because of our audience, because of the size and the commitment and the motivation and the, you know, willingness to get involved that our audience represents. And I used to say this more often. I haven't said it in a while, but it's worth a reminder that the reason they hate Alex Jones, the reason they hate InfoWars, is because we don't just tell you what's going on. We encourage you to get active, to get involved, to not sit back and allow these things to happen, but to make a difference, giving people hope, real hope, that things can change in a peaceful, Republican way into the future. and they hate that. Now, if we had just talked about what was going on, they wouldn't have liked it, certainly, but they wouldn't have come after us like they came after us. Why do they come after us? The classic image, Alex Jones with a bullhorn. He doesn't need a platform, folks. And we've been saying this forever. You take away Alex Jones's microphone and his studio and the cameras and the internet, he'll be on a street corner with a bullhorn doing the same thing he was doing 30 years ago when nobody knew who he was. And it's that spirit and it's that motivation and it's that unwillingness to lie down and take it that makes us dangerous, because that's an infectious idea. That is it can become a plague for them. It can really, you know, become a pandemic, a worldwide pandemic of liberty, the brush fires of liberty, sparks flying and more brush fires being lit. That's what they hate. There's a lot of people out there that have talked about this stuff for a while. A lot of people out there that'll write books about it, that'll have radio shows about it, TV shows about it, and they don't like it. I mean, the bad guys don't like that type of stuff, but they don't spend tens of millions of dollars in multiple years and the highest paid law firms in America trying to take those people down. They try to take Alex Jones down because he leads marches, because he leads protests, because he tells you the truth and tells you how we can fix it, getting involved, getting political, weaponizing your power as humanity and realizing that there's 1,000 times more of us than there are of them. And by simply using the power that God gave us, we can be free of their control. So that's what makes us dangerous. That's what makes you dangerous. And so I appreciate you going to alexjonesapp.com or just going to the Apple App Store, getting the Alex Jones Network app, AJN Live, and keeping us on top, keeping us number one. To be honest, I didn't expect us to dethrone X. That is huge. That is, who else could do that? Who else could? Again, I'm not like, I don't want to even crap on other people, but maybe I won't. Maybe I won't. Look, all I'm saying is that we've actually had a sort of by accident scientific study of this. And when Alex Jones was interviewing Nick Fuentes, they learned that YouTube was going to let people back on. They both made a channel. By the next morning, they were both taken down. But in the meantime, Alex had gained hundreds of thousands of followers. And I think Nick had like 30-something thousand as well, which is huge. And I really am not trying to insult Nick, because I do think he's on an upward trajectory, and he has been for years, but so are we. But it's just a reminder that, like, InfoWars is not just another media outlet. We're not just another dissident right-wing organization. You really can't put us in the same, you know, category as, you know, Daily Caller and The Blaze and, you know, whatever else, and then InfoWars. Like, no, you've got InfoWars and then a bunch of copycat followers and mimics. And they're great. No insult to them. I love the people that work there. I think a lot of them do great work, but they're not InfoWars. And that's worth reestablishing in everybody's mind, reminding everybody why it is that we fought so hard for this place, why it is that they've targeted us so much. I won't go over and over it, but it's fantastic to see that we're the number one app on the store. And that, again, is indicative and a reflection of the incredible power of you, the American people. And we've had a lot of victories. I've got breaking news. I've got an infinite number of videos to get to, and I'm going to try to get to your calls today as well. I probably will. We're going to talk about Antifa, Nick Sartor getting arrested, obviously. We're going to talk about Netflix and the transgender ban, and I'm going to take it deeper than probably anybody else has and show you that it's not an accident, that it's not just a matter of cultural, you know, whatever, you know, where it's just like they just think like trans people are cool. No, this is a giant psychological operation to normalize sexualizing children, because it's about destroying humanity at its most fundamental level. So we'll get into that, and I'll show you the scientific movement that corresponds with the brainwashing in the media, so that the media is both presenting you children as being sexualized, and there's science going on in the background trying to normalize that concept so horrible things can happen. So I'm going to get really into that and discuss all of that. And of course, we'll get into anti-Semitism in Israel. And it is genuinely shocking to me how blatant they're being with all of this. And how they got a they got control of TikTok. Like they just sort of have dropped all pretense. If you really listen to them, like they were kind of trying for a while to say, well, China, you know, it's about China and it's about, you know, this foreign power, maybe like getting our information. Maybe it's about spreading propaganda to our kids. Like we never got a real solid excuse, but we were assured that this was about China until the deal happened. And then Benjamin Netanyahu is presenting to a bunch of American so-called, you know, American influencers and going, TikTok was the greatest victory we've had in a long time. We had to take over TikTok and we did, and it's ours now. And so we have that and that's great, but now it's time to go for X. And so they're going for X and they have already started and it's starting to move pretty quickly. And it's kind of freaking me out. Honestly, it's freaking me out. I'm having flashbacks. I'm having like PTSD flashbacks of the old Twitter, of Twitter before Elon Musk, of a time when genuinely every time I got out my phone, I was not sure whether or not my account still existed. That every couple of months, I'd open up Twitter to find, sorry, your account has been suspended. Some dumb idiot was offended by the awesome and based thing that you said, and so you can't have an account anymore, and I have to make a new one and have to try to tell people and always start off at zero. And like, it's why I continue to defend Elon Musk and celebrate Elon Musk and thank Elon Musk sincerely for what he's given us, because for the last 2 years, we haven't had to worry about that. We have not. I haven't even thought about it. Hasn't even entered into my mind. I think something I tweeted. I have an idea. I put it out there. I've shed the, you know, personal filter that we had to have back when, Twitter was so censorious, where everything you tweet, you first have to think, ooh, how should I phrase this? Can I say this? Do I have to change it? What do I do? It hasn't been like that since Elon Musk purchased the site. And I know I got people going, well, but it's not perfect. People still get banned. Of course. Yes. Of course. It's not perfect. It's not totally 100% free speech. I would open it up even more if it was up to me. But then this morning, hundreds of very prominent, very popular accounts, very closely associated with me in a lot of cases, were stripped of their blue check mark or deleted entirely. Something happened last night or this more early this morning where the order was given, the axe came down. And a lot of people have lost their ability to make money through X, their ability to receive, you know, preferential feed location. Like there's a lot of stuff that you get when you're able to be verified on X. A lot of anti-Israel, anti-Jewish accounts have been nuked from orbit as of this morning. I thought we were over this. Like it really, I'm not even exaggerating that much or being that facetious when I say like PTSD flashbacks. I genuinely started to like panic a little bit, like, oh crap, am I gonna, you know, do I need to start deleting tweet? Like it puts you in a mindset of slavishness that I despise, and we cannot allow that to happen. And I don't know what we have to do to stop that from happening, but clearly they've announced it. They're being blatant about it. And again, that kind of freaks me out in and of itself that like they've done the calculus and they've decided, okay, if we take over X in a very aggressive and overt way, you've got to weigh the pros and cons. And for people who are trying to run a worldwide psychological operation, mostly focused on protecting and supporting Israel, then they have to weigh the pros and cons of, okay, the pro is that they can delete critics. The con is that everybody sees they delete critics and people don't like censors and you have the Streisand effect and all this other stuff. But apparently they have run the equation. They've run the algorithm and they've decided that it's worth it. That it doesn't matter if everybody knows who's doing it or why, as long as it gets done. And it's the power of censorship. Hey, you know, people might not like censorship, but if they can't talk about it, does it really matter? People might know that it's the Israelis dominating American companies and silencing Americans for their own foreign benefit. But if you say that, you'll be deleted. So that's the calculus they're running with. That's the calculation they've made. And I find that very disturbing. I find that very disturbing because it is a deliberate almost advertisement of choosing force over discussion, of choosing censorship over open dialogue. And unfortunately, it seems like the FBI is going along with them in this. Kash Patel came out yesterday and talked about essentially hate speech laws, misinformation laws, disinformation rules for social media. Kind of like Pam Bondi coming out and saying free speech isn't hate speech. This is a very disturbing development. So I think while the FBI is separating itself from the ADL and the SPLC, which is fantastic, and again, just a, we do need to celebrate that victory and appreciate the responsiveness of the Trump administration in certain cases like this. While we are celebrating that and encouraging that and really treating it like the triumph that it is, we need to explain the underlying reason why these organizations are bad, why they shouldn't be in charge, what it is about their ideas that are so distasteful to the American conscience, so that we don't just get rid of the institutions, we get rid of the underlying philosophy that allowed them to flourish for 100+ years. And that's another thing. I said a little bit yesterday, but I really want to remind you, the ADL was founded in 1913. By the mid-50s, it had more or less total, like, veto power over everything published in America. Every book, every newspaper, everything. The ADL had to approve it or else you'd be in trouble. That was the 1950s. By the 60s, they were training the FBI. This has been a century of unelected, self-appointed ADL control over the thoughts of Americans. That is, for the first time ever in my life, been dealt a serious and significant blow to their power. FBI cuts ties with the Anti-Defamation League. FBI director says he's also cut ties. They have also cut ties with the SPLC, which is great to see. Now, I'm not satisfied with this. And I also just want to point out that it seems like time and time again these days, we have things like Kash Patel, leader of the FBI, saying in no uncertain words that the ADL is being kicked out of, you know, advising the FBI, you know, won't be listened to anymore, that they're wrong and bad, and that they've spied on the American people. I'm sorry, what? They were committing espionage on American soil for a foreign state, and the worst punishment they've received is that they're not going to be allowed to directly be in charge of the FBI anymore? No, that's not how this works. That should not be how this works. If you're accusing an organization of committing espionage against American citizens for a foreign power, they should be charged with espionage, not just deprived of their inordinate power, maybe temporarily. So I think we need some, I think we need to push a little bit harder. And that's the silver lining on this cloud, is not only are we having major, you know, tactical victories against the SPLC, the ADL, all of these horrible anti-American organizations that, by the way, are funded by our taxpayer dollars. The SPLC gets something like $100 million a year. Now, just think about that. They take your tax dollars by the hundreds of millions. They send them to these, you know, leftist Jewish supremacist organizations who then use that money to silence you and are walking around the FBI office giving orders. I mean, it's just outrageous, utterly and completely outrageous. So we need to see more movement of that. And the silver lining of this is that conservatives have learned not to be satisfied. In fact, I think the number one response to the news that the ADL was being removed from the FBI's, you know, trusted sources list, I think the number one response to that was, good, now do the SPLC. Oh, you got rid of the ADL? Good, about time. Now do the SPLC. Have you done the SPLC yet? Why not? Where are you on that? So now that the SPLC has been removed from partnership with the FBI, maybe they should be investigated. Maybe they should actually be charged with sedition or conspiracy or any of the other crimes that they pretty openly commit. And that includes things, Jack Posobiec was tweeting about it today, that, you know, when the FBI moves against Catholic groups, they reference SPLC articles as probable cause to get their warrants. Again, we're dealing with an incestuous relationship where the very people that are providing the evidence are the ones instructing the law enforcement to go after the evidence they provided. And there's no countervailing force anywhere. It's just these unappointed, unelected somebody, the lawyers from somewhere with their own interests, their own ethnic interests, foreign interests. It's not America. It's not American interests. We never voted for them. We don't even have a provision in the government to allow them to exist with the authority that they have. But they just do it. But they just declare themselves the authorities. They declare their own information as if it is the equivalent of evidence presented in court. And then the FBI acts on that. It's a giant con game. It is a gigantic con game. And it goes to something I talk about almost religiously on this show, which is this ability for the left to somehow impose themselves as authorities and have everybody underneath act like they are God. They, what comes from them is the truth, and anybody contradicting them, no matter how obvious it is, no matter how, you know, evidence to the claim is, it doesn't matter because the SPLC says Catholics are terrorists. Therefore, Catholics are terrorists, as if it's a mathematical equation, as if it is a revelation from God. They say it, and it is so. And it's the case with, you know, judges, the off news. It's the case with intelligence agencies. And if you watch the media, you'll realize this. The mainstream media treats intelligence agencies not as a, you know, the clandestine arm of a national security apparatus. They treat them as dispensers of truth, as the fountains of reality. So if the spy agencies say something, it gets put in the newspaper as if it is factual and incontrovertible and absolute. But why? These people, okay, it would be bad enough if any organization had that level of authority again over all of the media industry everywhere in the world. Yeah, that would be bad no matter what the organization is. But then you look into it and you realize that the organizations, they treat as if they are God themselves and the dispensers of truth, are the biggest liars that have ever lived. The whole point of these things existing is deception, right? Why would you have a CIA or an FBI if not to commit clandestine activity in other countries or here in America? That's the reason they exist. So you have organizations whose entire purpose for being is to deceive, to lie, to manipulate, to lie. I mean, there's no other word I guess I need. To lie. Their whole point is to lie, and yet they're considered the arbiters of truth. They're considered the ultimate authorities on earth right now. And you'll know, I mean, just read things. It's like they don't need to provide evidence. They don't need to, I mean, it goes to the Hunter Biden laptop, to, you know, Hillary Clinton, to whatever else. The reason that the mainstream media can get away with not actually investigating this stuff is because they're simply stenographers for the intelligence agencies, and they believe everything they say unquestioningly, whether that's because Project Mockingbird continues at a pace and the people there are actually receiving direct orders from the intelligence agency, or whether it's just sort of an assumed de facto kind of, you know, established NPC mindset that just doesn't even know what it's doing, but finds itself almost unconsciously repeating everything that the intelligence agencies say with no critical thought or, you know, looking into anything ever. It's a very disturbing reality once you truly understand what that really means. That unelected, anonymous spy masters from Washington, D.C. have the ability to dictate reality to the rest of us, and look where that's gotten us, and look where we are now. So we're going to get into all of that. We've got breaking news about the peace agreement between Hamas and Israel. It looks like Hamas has agreed to release all Israeli hostages, which is pretty amazing, not expected necessarily. Pretty unexpected, actually, I would say. So we'll cover that. We'll get into Netflix as well, and the insanity of Portland, Oregon, and Antifa. We'll cover it all. We'll bring it all to you. Very big show here on the War Room. I do want to remind you to go to thealexjonesstore.com, thealexjonesstore.com. Keep us on the air and in the fight and standing out as a premier example of what is possible when people with will and a mission and a drive and the support of the American people can accomplish. Go to thealexjonesstore.com, and I'll see you back here in just a few minutes.
So you were just telling me that you had a brain disease.
I started having seizures like a few years ago, and everybody in my family knows I'm a neuroscientist.
What did you do to fix it?
Methylene blue.
I'd take it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mel Gibson was on here talking about it.
This stuff works, man.
I take it every day as well. And
yeah, RFK Jr. told me about it.
Yeah, man, it's fantastic.
What is Bobby Kennedy Jr. dropping into that glass of water?
Plenty of folks are wondering what was in that little bottle he uncorked during a flight.
Methylene blue.
Show her Kennedy taking. Kennedy literally gobbles.
He must be doing something right. That ripped bod is 73 years old.
You shouldn't have to tell a doctor about methylene blue. I think everybody should know about it. It's changed my life.
I was in a wheelchair. That methylene blue, I knew what that did for me. I knew that it got me up and walking again, and I was having seizures without it, and I was bad, really bad. So I ordered it. I started taking it. And boy, let me tell you something. What a blessing.
It clears the brain fog where you're actually able to focus more clearly.
For me, it's like a fog lifted, but it was like a veil lifted off, you know? Incredible. Best product that I've purchased so far.
It is a miracle. It's been proven for 100 years. It's one of the most well-proven drugs out there.
Let me tell you something. I'm walking without a cane. I take one pill a day of the ivermectin with the methylene blue. And I got to tell you, what a blessing. I am so blessed.
My kids take it. My wife takes it. Everybody takes it.
I used to have to take, $10,000 a week?
Right.
To get it in my arm and sit there for 6 hours a day to get it pumped in my system. And now I can take two pills or drink it once a day and pay what? I don't know, $30, $40 a bottle of it?
Depends on what the sale is,
And it's helping me to have a quality of life that I didn't have before that I have now. And I got to tell you, what a blessing. I don't care what anybody says. I know what it's like with it, and I know what it's like without it.
Yeah!
I'm not paid to say this, not one dime. This is the best product you guys have ever had. You guys got to order it at the AlexJonesStore.com.
Our methylene blue, medical grade, made in Florida, is incredible. Cleans out your mitochondria, clarity, focus, energy. You've seen the rave reviews of every guest we've had on. It's game changing.
I feel like, wow, there's power in coalescing all your thoughts.
Did you hear our last guest, what she said happened to her?
No. What?
She said brain fog just lifted.
That's what it feels like.
I feel lighter. It's really interesting. I almost like feel smarter.
This stuff kicked in and it like instantly I just felt like this weird meditative energy. I don't know how to explain it. I don't feel jittery. I just felt like instantly like I went from 5 hours of sleep like I got last night to like 10 hours. I don't know how to explain it. This stuff's new to me, but I like it. Methylene blue works for me.
I feel it in my head and neck too. My brain's going really fast. I really like it.
Unlimited populous power!
Volunteer power!
You feel instant energy, but without the jitteriness of caffeine and focus. What I felt was focus, mental focus.
I do feel like it's eliminated the brain fog a lot.
I do subscribe to the methylene blue. I feel better. I feel like I'm 25.
Like I said, I've been taking the methylene blue, and it is freaking awesome. I actually subscribe monthly now to it, and I got a couple other people that I work with. I gave them it, and they did the same thing.
I'm jacked up on the methylene blue. It's the best thing you guys have ever had. Please go to the Alex Jones.
Powered by Methylene Blue. Ultra Methylene Blue at thealexjonesstore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Infowars.com, band.video. Make sure you're following us on X, at AJN Live, at Real Alex Jones, at Harrison H. Smith, at Infowars. We got some breaking news that I'll get into. I'm surprised by this, frankly kind of shocked by this. Hamas says it agrees to release all Israeli hostages under Trump Gaza plan. Hamas said on Friday it had agreed to release all Israeli hostages, alive or dead, under the terms of U.S. President Donald Trump's Gaza proposal and signaled readiness to immediately enter mediated negotiations to discuss the details. And we got an update here from Jerusalem Post. They said they would release all hostages in an effort to re-enter negotiations in a Friday statement. The statement released by the terror organization said it would release all hostages living and dead according to the exchange formula. Outlined by President Trump, Hamas gave mediators its response to U.S. President Donald Trump's plan for ending the Gaza war earlier Friday evening. Hamas said it would approve transferring the power of the Gaza Strip over to a Palestinian governing body that would be elected based on Palestinian national consensus and with Arab and Islamic support. So that's interesting. They say they will enter renegotiations. The terror organization added that regarding the other issues included in President Trump's proposals concerning the future of the Gaza Strip and the legitimate rights of the Palestinian people, these are linked to comprehensive national positions and to relevant international laws and resolutions. Hamas said that these will be discussed in a unified Palestinian national framework in which Hamas will participate and contribute responsibly. So that's interesting. So the proposal put forward was that they would release all the hostages and essentially give up power entirely and allow for an international body to take over administration of the Palestinian areas, including Gaza. So it sounds like they're agreeing to release the hostages maybe as a starting point, a good faith starting point, saying, you know, we'll do our part, but we need some leeway on, you know, some of the other stuff. I was not really expecting this, to be honest with you. I was expecting this to be a bit of a trap, a bit of a, you know, impossible thing for them to agree with, assuming and you know, hoping that they wouldn't fulfill it and Israel could just go all in and say, well, we tried. But apparently they're accepting. Apparently they're in favor of this. I've been seeing some conflicting. I mean, everything about this has been conflicting. It's almost hilarious. I was going to cover it the other day, but literally on the same day, I see somebody post and they reference the BBC and they say Hamas, rejects settlement. I thought, okay. So I searched that on Google and the first two responses are Hamas rejects settlement, Hamas open to settlement. Okay. So it's like BBC and, you know, Reuters are just saying two completely different things. And then you've got the Arab nations around putting out a letter endorsing the agreement, encouraging Hamas to accept it. But then they also apparently are saying that the original agreement has been changed a little bit and Israel manipulated what the agreement said. So then they weren't in favor of it. Everything seems arbitrary and up in the air at this point. But for somebody that likes peace, this seems good to me. I want people to stop being murdered by anybody. So it seems like this is a step in the right direction, and that's very good to see. So wouldn't it be something? Wouldn't it be something if Donald Trump ended this 2,000-year-old conflict? Wouldn't that be a feather in his cap? So we'll bring any news, you know, as to that as it comes up. Let's talk about Netflix. Netflix has been a pretty big topic of conversation recently for yet again promoting disgusting, degenerate, and perverted content to children. Again, I say again because it feels like we've been through this before. I mean, do you guys remember the Cuties scandal? Do you guys remember when Netflix came out with a show that very explicitly sexualized preteen girls? You remember that? Nobody canceled their account. I guess they got the account back again. I feel like a sucker. I haven't had Netflix for like 5 years. Everybody else went back on that promise. But there's a good reason for it. There's a good reason to reject this. And this again goes to a phenomenon I've seen that I find both hilarious and inexplicable. You will still find, I never grab it. I see it all the time. Next time I see it, I'll grab it. But I watch a lot of, like, you know, YouTube. So I like seeing what the YouTube conspiracy world is looking into, or people that reference it. And you'll find, let's not show the Cuties. We remember. Thank you. Let's get it off the screen. Okay, that's bigger now. Okay, thank you. Sorry, I was distracted by the sexualized children on the screen next to me. Good Lord. Yeah. What was I just saying? We all canceled Netflix because of that disgusting show. Then everybody went back to it. There are people pointing out that the Obamas have been, you know, instrumental in this. The thing that's weird is that you'll still see to this day YouTube videos or, you know, conspiracy people, and they still point to stuff like the word sex appearing in the dust during Lion King. And they're like, look, subliminal messaging. And it's like, you know that movie is 30 years old, right? That movie came out in 1995. You think, why are you bringing it up? What does that pertain to? What do you think you're showing there? Like, that used to be the level of, like, subliminal messaging that people would look out for. And I think it probably was an effort to subliminally influence children. But it's so weird that people are still referencing that. They're still referencing the word sex from 30 years ago in The Lion King, when you have, like, blatantly transgender indoctrination in kids' shows all over the internet now, all over mainstream media and, you know, cable networks, Nickelodeon, whatever else. And it's just, but I don't even know what I'm explaining here. But I think you get what I'm saying. But I think you should understand what I'm saying, that we've gone from the word sex in the dust for a second, midway through The Lion King, to entire shows that celebrate transgender characters for being transgender, or, you know, whatever other disgusting things that they're doing now. Like, we've moved so far beyond. I mean, it's kind of like what happens with the, you know, award shows. It used to be you had to look for symbolism. It used to be, look, see the circle on the ground? That's a magic circle. So what they're doing inside is a spell. Now we're all looking at the spell, and it was like a circle on the ground. And it was true. I'm not downplaying the old way that symbolism used to be used, but now it's just Lady Gaga dressed up like Satan standing over a cage of writhing women praising the god of hell. So it's like, okay, does anybody notice? Would anybody like to notice this and pay attention to it? So let's go to some of these clips here. Let's go to some of these. The story is that postmillennial Elon Musk calls to cancel Netflix over trans agenda in children's shows, writers celebrating Charlie Kirk's murder. Elon Musk called for users to cancel their Netflix subscriptions over the streaming platform's children's content. Quote, cancel Netflix for the health of your kids, he wrote on X, sharing a post showing a transgender woke agenda Trojan horse being welcomed in by your kids. It was also revealed that the writer of one of the trans-pushing children shows celebrated the murder of Charlie Kirk. Well, duh. Well, of course he did. Of course he did. Let's go to clip five first. This is Coco Melon Lane, a Netflix show for children, and it showcases a little boy in a dress dancing for his two gay dads. Isn't that just wholesome and holistic? Let's watch.
Thing that we know about you, you love to get up and dance.
How about you break out those moves
for your two biggest fans?
Oh, look, it's a little boy in a tutu dancing for his two gay dads.
If you're not sure what to choose,
so wholesome, so
think
American.
About all the things you like to do. Just be you.
Just be me?
Well, not exactly
when
you.
Trying to decide,
I mean, you're a boy, so.
Think about all the things you like to do. Just be you.
Just be me.
I don't know if. I think maybe my son is like particularly good at this, but it's true for all kids. If you have kids, their ability to mimic is like next level. Just this weekend, my son had a toy and I was like, oh, it looks like a TIE fighter. And he was like, a what? By the way, that was awesome. Like introducing a kid to Star Wars for the first time when he's like four and he doesn't really know anything about it was very fun. And it's like so absorbing. And so I'm like, oh, you don't know what TIE fighters are. All right, let me, you know, find a picture. And he's like, whoa. I'm like, okay, let me show you a video. So I pull up a video on YouTube. You search like, you know, TIE fighter, New Hope. And it's a scene from the New Hope Star Wars where the Millennium Falcon's being attacked by TIE fighters and it's Luke and Han. And Luke's all sad because Obi-Wan just died. And it's Han like, we're not out of this yet, kid. And they go and they get in the guns and they're just like shooting the TIE fighters as they're strafing the Millennium Falcon. And it's like a 2-minute video. Yeah, let's bring it up. And like my son watches this twice and has the entire thing memorized. The entire thing, right? And it's a whole, and you know, kids are just, they're just these sponges. They just absorb everything. They absorb every, you know, minute body movement, every, you know, tone of voice. And it was hilarious. My son's like, what is this? Who are they? What's going on? What's this ship called? Who's that? Who's the man? Who's the woman? What the hell is that? He sees Chewbacca and he's like, what is that? Who is that guy? I'm like, that's Chewbacca. He's an alien. He's like, and the robots are the bad guys? I'm like, no, the robots aren't the bad guys. He's like, who's the little one? Who's that little guy? R2-D2. Okay, what does he do? Anyway, it was very fun. But the point is, he watches this twice, and he's got everything down pat. And from then on, like this whole week, he'll just run into the room and be like, Dad, we're not out of this yet. Come on. And he'll like run over, and he's got like things set up to be the shooters. And like, but they just absorb it and then regurgitate it. They absorb and then they mimic everything. And it's, again, maybe my kid is, you know, especially like this, but you show him Avatar The Last Airbender. He's got every move down. Every move. He can do it. And like, you know, Avatar The Last Airbender, if you don't know, it's a kid's show and they're basically doing magic by doing martial arts. So it's great. It's awesome for little kids because it's martial arts. So they're running around and like fighting, but they don't actually touch each other. They aren't actually hitting each other. You just sort of do a punch in the air and then, you know, you shoot a water ball at them or whatever. And each style of magic, the fire, the water, the earth, is a different style of martial arts. So the earth style is Tai Chi and then the water style is something else. And so my son watches like one episode and suddenly he like knows Tai Chi. He's like doing all of, so my point of this is that these people know this. The people programming these shows know exactly what they're doing. They know the younger you are, the more impressionable you are. They know that when you see something like a little kid being celebrated and rewarded on screen, the kid is absorbing that and going, that's how I should be. That kid's the cool kid. I should be like him. You know, and it can happen unintentionally and intentionally. And it happens regardless a lot of times of the content of the show. It's kind of hard to explain, but, and they've done studies on this actually. Things like the Disney Channel would show these, would have shows where the whole episode, you're watching a bratty kid be bratty, right? And the whole episode, the bratty kid is like the cool kid. And then the end of the episode, the last 5 minutes or so, the bratty kid gets their comeuppance. They get a pie in the face or whatever it is. And it's like, see, the bully, you know, the so-called cool kid was actually a bully and he got what was coming to him at the end of the day. But they've done studies on this. It doesn't matter if the story of the episode says that what the kid was doing was bad. They've just watched 25 minutes of the bratty, annoying, brash, know-it-all kid be cool. Be the cool kid. For 25 minutes, he's cool. In the last 5 minutes, he gets what's coming to him and there's a comeuppance, but it doesn't undo the 25 minutes of programming. Here's how to be cool. Here's what makes you, you know, in charge and in power. And it's why you see like little girls that grew up on the Disney Channel are the worst. They're the worst. Like, you know, tween girls, like 12, 13 girls, 13 year old girls who have been watching Disney Channel since they were 5 or 6, they genuinely think that like being a bitch means you're right. And that like talking down to your parents means that you know more than them. And it's like awful. It like ruins children. I've seen it with like my friends, little sisters. It's not good. Hopefully they can get out of it eventually. But the point again is that these people know what they're doing. They know exactly how impactful this stuff is. They know how influential this stuff is. They know that it can shape the mind of a child. Even just a short little clip, like the 2 minute one I was talking about, Star Wars, they remember every little thing about it. And it gets implanted in their head and it shapes the way they see the world. So when you've got two gay dads celebrating the little kid in the tutu saying, just be yourself, you know, be yourself by being something that you are not, right? Be yourself by utterly changing the fundamental reality about yourself. I'm not saying the messaging is consistent. I'm saying it's effective. I'm saying what they're doing is purposeful. They know what they're doing. I wouldn't be surprised if half the people working on kids shows from Netflix don't have, well, first of all, I bet 99% of them don't have kids. That's one thing. Just like all the people in the teachers unions don't have kids. Randy Weingarten, head of the, federal school system, doesn't have kids. They don't actually have skin in this fight, but they do want to control your kids. They do want to influence your kids. And I wouldn't be surprised if 90% of them don't even like kids material anyway. It's not their passion. It's not like they're like, this is what I want to do. They want to manipulate your children. They want your children to be influenced by them, not you. So they get jobs in places where they can influence children without the knowledge of their parents. That's the reason they're making these things. That's the reason they got involved in these things. They aren't out there to make good TV shows and just happen to have this viewpoint. They're out to push their viewpoint, and they find that children's TV shows are the most effective way of getting that message across. So I really want you to understand this, that what we're talking about is not just a, you know, an attempt to, well, you know, there are people with gay dads and they deserve to be represented too. And it's like, okay, you can make that argument, but that's not what's happening here. No, what's happening here is they're deliberately trying to manipulate your children. And that is disgusting, I find. Because again, and it's, again, you'll notice this when, if you have kids, any children's material that tells children to be more accepting, to be more open is evil. Let me say that again. Any book, any TV show, any movie, any toy that is trying to tell children to not be biased Cocomelon is evil anyway, by the way. Cocomelon is deliberately designed to be addictive for children. It is literally an audiovisual drug for preschoolers that they push. It's sick, and you should genuinely don't ever let your children listen to a single Coco Melon song ever. It will ruin them. It's very bad. I'm not even kidding. Should we move on? Should we just move on? Should we look at more of these things? Because there's a lot of them. Let's go to clip 13 here. Children's Netflix show Strawberry Shortcake, Barry in the Big City is promoting transgender drag queens to children. Let's watch this.
Correct response. Like cotton candy clouds floating in a blue sky. Banoffee will slide that runway. Banoffee, tell us why you chose this delicious dress.
As a trans, Barry, I love living out loud as my most authentic self. And I wanted to dress as bold and unique as I am, which, let's face it, is a tall order.
Yeah, sorry, I just had to throw up a little bit there. Okay. So drag queens came out of the, underground gay drug culture of New York City in the 1980s. Somehow, it has now become a prominent fixture in children's cartoons. So the movement of transsexual gay bug chasers is now a prominent fixture in children's cartoons for preschoolers. Okay. I think it's time for the cleansing fire. I think it's time maybe God floods us again because we deserve it. So again, anybody, any book, movie, anything telling your kid to be accepting is evil. Why? Because children accept literally everything. Everything. Everything's new to them. They have no idea what's normal, what's not, what's good, what's bad. They have no idea. It's kind of scary in a way because, like, you have a kid. I mean, the first time, you know, when they see a person in the dress, it's the first time they're ever seeing it. They might have a natural revulsion to it because there is something deeply unnatural. Like you see the videos, we show them over and over where it's a big fat guy in a dress with makeup and a beard. And he's like reaching out for a kid and the kid is like, you know, okay. To some degree, when they encounter it in person, there's like a revulsion that's natural and good. And, you know, it's about suppressing that, right? It's about teaching your kid, no, accept this, right? Stop being revolted. Stop listening to your natural impulse. Stop, you know, thinking for yourself. This is good. I know it looks bad and it makes you queasy, but you need to get over that and accept this. Like anybody telling your kid that is disgusting. But for the most part, kids have no idea what's normal. They have no idea what's good or what's bad. They have no idea what they accept and don't. They accept everything. They accept absolutely everything. So anybody telling your children to be accepting, to not be biased, to not be mean just because someone's different. It's like, that's evil. I've got books that we've like checked out from the library where the whole thing is like, you know, the story of a bunch of little sheep and, you know, their friend, the wolf. And I'm literally like, this is like a genre of children's books now where the bad sheep are the one that are judging the wolf by its, you know, appearance. And there will be like one little sheep that's friends with the wolf. And he's like, why is everybody so mean to my friend? And he finally convinces him. The end of the book is like, and so the wolf got to hang out with the sheep and they were all together and happy. And it's like, what an insane thing to teach. What an insane thing to teach. So you're saying that, you know, for children, the lesson they should learn is that if there's some weirdo that everybody's like, hey, that guy's dangerous, it's those people that are bad. It's people that are warning you against the predators. They're the bad ones. They have to be overcome with friendship. Go be friends with the wolf. You're a little fish. Go be friends with the shark. They're not bad. They're just misunderstood. And it's like, okay, in nature, what you're doing is actually telling the sheep to kill themselves. And it ain't so different in human society either. I should bring in some of these books. There's one in particular that, I mean, it's not exactly that, but it's very, very close to that. It's very, very close where it's like the one character is like a dinosaur and the other characters are like little animals and they're all terrified of the meat-eating, carnivorous dinosaur. But one of them's like, no, he's actually friendly. And, you know, they all treat him meanly and he's the victim and he is made to feel bad because he's different. And then we all learn to come together and embrace our differences. And, you know, if it was me, the last page would be just like a bloody mess and the, you know, predator sitting there with a full stomach having swallowed all of them. But that's not the lesson they're teaching. So anybody teaching your kid, go be friends with the predator. Go be friends with the person who everybody tells you to stay away from. They're just bigoted. They're just small-minded. You understand. You're enlightened and cool, aren't you? So you're going to go be friends with the person that your parents tell you to stay away from. That's sick. That's utterly and completely disgusting. And I've spent too long just simply ranting about this because I got more clips to show you if you, you know, feel like throwing up. But this is deeper than people think. These are all from the last month. Sociology journals are normalizing sexualization of children. Dr. Colin Wright is an evolutionary biology PhD, Manhattan Institute fellow, and CEO editor-chief of Reality's Last Stand. His writing appears in all these things. Academic publishing has always produced its share of eccentric ideas, but some areas of social justice scholarship have gone far beyond eccentricity. Many of these papers seem less like genuine research and more like opportunities for authors to dress up personal fetishes in academic jargon. Some are comical, like papers on eco-sexuality, in which scholars eroticize nature and describe sexual encounters with trees, lakes, or even the earth itself, but a disturbing subset takes its fringe sexual impulses into disturbing and even dangerous territory. One paper titled Queering Babies and published in Springer Nature Journal, explicitly sexualized infants. Okay, it's not the only one. Again, from Colin Wright, a new peer-reviewed paper in American Sociology Association's official journal, Sex and Sexuality, calls for the elimination of the idea of childhood sexual innocence and the social ethical taboos against children engaging in sexual acts. A peer-reviewed paper in a high-profile scientific journal called Sex and Sexuality is explicitly calling for the elimination of the idea of childhood innocence, sexual innocence. It's not an idea. It's a factual reality. Children are innocent. Like, it's not, we're not just, it, this isn't like, you know, what fundamental Christian BS where it's just like, sexual impulse is evil. Push it all down. You know, like, this is about preserving the innocence and naivety and purity of children, and these people despise that. They despise that. I haven't talked about it in a while, but there was a protest in Austin when a bunch of parents and church groups were coming together to stop sexual education from coming in. They were all protesting. A single counter-protester was a trans castrato with no children who was literally shouting through a bullhorn, "Your children will be ours. We will destroy their innocence. Your innocence is evil, and we will consume it. These people are predators. Keep them the hell away from your children's minds, folks. Cancel Netflix."
I started having seizures like a few years ago, and everybody in my family knows I'm a neuroscientist.
What did you do to fix it?
Methylene blue.
I'd take it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mel Gibson was on here talking about it.
This stuff works, man.
I take it every day as well. And
yeah, RFK Jr. told me about it.
Yeah, man, it's fantastic.
What is Bobby Kennedy Jr. dropping into that glass of water?
Plenty of folks are wondering what was in that little bottle he uncorked during a flight.
Methylene blue.
Show her Kennedy taking it. Kennedy literally gobbles it.
He must be doing something right. That ripped bod is 73 years old.
You shouldn't have to tell a doctor about methylene blue. I think everybody should know about it. It's changed my life.
I knew what that did for me. I knew that it got me up and walking again, and I was having seizures without it. And I was bad, really bad. So I ordered it. I started taking it. And boy, let me tell you something. What a blessing.
For me, it's like a fog lifted, but it was like a veil lifted off, you know? Incredible. Best product that I've purchased so far.
It clears the brain fog where you're actually able to focus more clearly.
Let me tell you something. I'm walking without a cane. I take one pill a day of the ivermectin with the methylene blue. And I got to tell you, what a blessing. I am so blessed.
It is a miracle, and it's been proven for 100 years. You know, it's one of the most well-proven drugs out there. My kids take it. My wife takes it.
Everybody takes it.
I used to have to pay, what, $10,000 a week?
Right.
To get it in my arm and sit there for 6 hours a day to get it pumped in my system. And now I can take two pills or drink it once a day.
Right.
And pay what? I don't know, $30, $40 a bottle of it.
Depends on what the sale is, yeah.
And it's helping me to have a quality of life that I didn't have before that I have now. And I got to tell you, what a blessing. I don't care what anybody says. I know what it's like with it, and I know what it's like without it.
Yeah!
Welcome back, folks. Second hour of War Room is on. I'm going to open up the phone lines for your calls in the third hour. I got so much stuff to talk about. It's not even funny how much I have to talk about. We got the UK government responding to this attack on a synagogue in just the most interesting way. In the most interesting way you can imagine. It's actually an appropriate way. It's actually kind of the normal way to respond. The reason it's so interesting, the reason it's so, you know, worth commenting on is because we've seen the way that they normally respond to terrorist attacks. And it's to encourage everybody to sing an Oasis song. Don't look back in anger, you guys. Just move forward and forget this ever happened. Okay? And if you actually want us to do something about this, you're going to go to jail. Okay, if you even dare to suggest that it's somehow our responsibility as the UK government that we are for some reason expected to not import millions of murderers and rapists and then cover up their crimes so that your children can be exploited without end, I mean, that's illegal. You can't do that. You'll go to jail. But when it comes to the you know, alpha, I shouldn't call them alphas because that gets mixed up. That's what they're called in Brave New World, right? Brave New World, you have the caste system. And there's some people that are simply worth more than others. Some people that are simply deserving of protection and support from the state. And some people that are there to be crushed and destroyed and deracinated and obliterated by the state. And I think we're finding out which side's which here, okay? And I got some videos to show you in that regard. Should we go to some of those now? Or should I keep talking about all the other things? Let me give you just a little overview of what else is going on. So Nick Sartor got arrested for putting out a fire. Okay. Yeah, alpha, beta, gamma, delta, epsilon. That's basically what we're working with here. Us white people, we're the epsilons, unfortunately. X-censorship is already started and is only going to increase. And I don't know what we need to do to help Elon Musk out. Help him weather this storm, but they're about to go all guns blazing against X. They've tried it a few times. He's weathered it a few times, but every time it's gotten a little bit more intense, a little bit more provocative. And they've been talking forever. I mean, we've got, you know, internal documents from 2022, places like SPLC and ADL organizing boycotts, sponsor boycotts, advertiser boycotts, trying to force X to put censorship in place. I want to talk about that, and I want to shout out some of the people that have had their accounts either restricted or deleted as of last night all at once in a giant purge. We also have some more information about the cell phone array that was discovered just outside of New York City during the UN. Apparently that was an installation by China, although I'm a little bit suspicious of that claim, but it would make sense. We've also got race to talk about. We got a lot of race to talk about. In fact, let's go to some of these videos, because it's not just that Netflix is teaching your children to be cross-dressing whores. It's also that they're racist against white people. Let's go to clip number 4 here. This is a scene from a show called Family Switch on Netflix. Let's see what they have to say about white people. Turn down all the money. There's a big telescope.
Oh, I'm sorry, but the exhibit's closed. Some clumsy family came in and knocked over the telescope last night. And you know they was white because black people don't create problems like this.
You can fix.
What? Wait, I'm sorry. What was that last line? Totally unnecessary. Totally random. Like, genuinely doesn't even fit in with the rest of the dialogue. Just, you know, shoehorned in there. That was a pretty good scene. Can we put a line just disparaging white people for no reason? Someone knocked over the telescope. By the way, It's like a 2-ton telescope. They knocked that over, really, did they? It'd have to be a white person if they're accomplishing something that great. I guess they'd have to be white if they're, you know, able to do something so unimaginably powerful, like knocking over a 2-ton telescope by accident. Yeah, well, we'll go to more on the other side.
And they'll be like, Al Schultz is right again. He got shut down. We've been fighting it. We don't want it. But yeah, it's happening. But they don't own the AlShowStore.com. And we have the last stand super sale. Buy one bottle, get any bottle free of any of the supplements, the ultramethylene blue, the Shilajit, the Irish sea moss, the bovine colostrum, the very best. It's all there at theAlShowStore.com. But whatever you do, go now to AlexJonesApp.com, AlexJonesApp.com, and get download the free app, listen to the show, and share it. We love our Muslims, too. Oh, they so good. Oh, they so sweet. Oh, wow. Be sure to get the app right now, folks, and share it right now. I'm just saying that bang on the head. You realize, Matthew, it's the viewers and listeners in this. It ain't me, brother.
Navigating the maze of mainstream narratives, Harrison Smith finds the hidden paths in the war room.
Oh yeah, we're talking about race. Why not, right? But of course, it ties into everything. It ties into everything. You want to talk about Netflix and how they're spreading transgender propaganda? Well, guess what? They're spreading anti-white propaganda as well. And it all comes from the same source. It all comes from the same source. Remember, the Kinzler experiment in Germany, the one that gave orphaned, not even orphaned children. Remember, people, you know, people talk about this stuff. They don't even know. They don't even know, dude. Candace was talking about something yesterday. She was talking about the Leo Frank, situation where the ADL was founded, but she was wrong. She said that, I can't remember what she said exactly, but the story is that Leo Frank was convicted, sentenced to death, and then pardoned by the governor, and then he was lynched. So the lynching was actually the thing it was the lawful punishment for the trial that he went through. They just tried to get around that by getting the governor to pardon him, but he was never innocent. And then when Candace Owens is talking about that, the way she phrased it made it sound like it was an actual lynching. Like that he wasn't convicted or, you know, that that wasn't the punishment, but she left out the part. No. The group, the B'nai B'rith Masonic Lodge that became the node that started ADL, that was, you know, they just pardoned the governor. They just pressured the governor for a pardon, and then he was lynched. So, you know, it's like even people that know a lot about this stuff, they actually don't know the full scope and scale of like what we're talking about here. So the Kinzler experiment. Way worse than people know. Way worse. People say it was about putting orphans with gay people. It was worse than that. They took kids from their parents to give to gay people. Then they had the gay people brainwash the kids into hating their own parents. Read this story. This one tells it. The German experiment that placed foster children with pedophiles. With the approval of the government, a renowned sexologist ran a dangerous program. How could this happen? Okay, people don't know that it wasn't orphans, it was children taken deliberately from their parents, and then like the parents were desperate to get their kids back, but they would never let them see them, and the gay guys that they handed the gay pedophiles that they handed the children over as sex toys to, would tell the kids, your mom doesn't want you back. She wants nothing to do with you. She wants you to be here, actually. And it would brainwash the kids, and I believe it's that article that we just showed. You know, the reason this came out is one of the kids who was taken from his mother, realized what was happening and broke out and told the story and was like, yeah, you know, by the time I was 9, I hated my mom and she would try to come see me and I would reject her because of what he'd been told by his foster parent. Okay, so it's worse than you can imagine. Now, why was that experiment done? It was done because they had developed and seen and scientifically established a connection between sexual morality and fascism. So if you want to defeat fascism, what do? Make the kids gay. Literally, that's why that experiment was held, because they established a connection between purity, sexual morality, which of course is just an aspect of morality, and said that if you have sexual purity, it will lead to racial consciousness and Nazism eventually. So they're going to try to cut that off early on in the process by raping children. So can't have Nazis. We can't have Nazis running around. Better rape those kids. Great argument. So people, you know, all these things are interconnected. So you've got Netflix teaching, you know, things against trans people while simultaneously just shoehorning in anti-white crap that isn't even funny. Okay, so the scene is family comes in to where a gigantic, maybe 4-ton telescope is. And like, even that, it's like, I don't know, man. There's something about modern TV. It's like it was written by aliens. It's like it was written by AI or something. They're like, somebody knocked over this telescope. Oh, what? The gigantic room-sized telescope that's bolted to the ground and controlled by hydraulic presses? Like, what are you talking about? Oh, they knocked it over. There's a movie called Dogtooth. Don't watch it. Don't watch it. It's a Greek movie. It's horrifying. If you want to be psychologically scarred, you can watch Dogtooth. But it's about a man who keeps his family inside and doesn't let them go anywhere and doesn't let them know anything. And when the movie takes place, his kids are adults, but they don't know anything. They've never been out of the house. They've never been allowed to watch TV or movies or read a book. They don't know anything. So they're kind of like children. And at one point, the son attacks the sister with a hammer. And when the dad finds out about it, the son tries to blame the cat. He's like, the cat came in and it's like, are you an alien? Do you not understand? Like, that's not possible. Our enemy is the cat. They blame it on the cat, the most dangerous animal there is. Because the dad's constantly like psychologically manipulating the kids. And so he keeps them in fear by telling them that the cat will kill them. And so then when the son attacks the daughter, attacks his sister, the son tries to blame it on the cat. That's kind of like who's writing Netflix shows is what I'm explaining. Is that's like they knocked over the telescope and you look over and there's just a giant telescope bolted to the ground and you're like, you don't really know anything, do you? You don't really know how the real world works even at the basic physical level. We should take this down. It's not a good, it's a very disturbing movie. We should take this video down, please, crew. Let's take the video down now, crew. Let's not watch it. Okay, thank you. I don't want to see this, and it's probably going to show some crap we shouldn't show. I said, don't watch it. Don't watch the show. But that's the mindset that I see coming through here is like, are you a human being who wrote this? Okay, you knocked over the telescope, but that's all beside the point. But it's all one. Did you see how it's all one? Like, so the scene is, I guess this family comes in and says, the black guy goes, oh, you can't come in. Somebody knocked over the telescope yesterday. Okay, so that's the scene. And then at some point, they're like, let's shoehorn in a joke. Let's put a joke in there. I have a joke. Let's say it was white people because black people don't do that sort of thing. That's not a joke, though. No, that's not a joke. That's just a mean thing to say. That's not true. Why would you put that in there? Let's watch that clip again, shall we? Let's watch the scene from this Netflix show, Family Switch. All right, let's watch this.
Oh, I'm sorry, but the exhibit's closed. Some clumsy family came in and knocked over the telescope last night. And you know they was white because black people don't create problems like this.
You can fix...
Because black people don't create problems like that? I was talking to a friend today. I was saying it's really hard. It's really hard having a show where I'm talking about topics that my initial sort of knee-jerk reaction is to like just go so hard. Just go so hard. About who invented the telescope. About problems black people create. And I was saying, I'm like, it's really hard not just giving them what they want. And thank God, my friend, she says, well, you know, it's not just those people that you're talking to. There's millions of regular Americans out there, and they see this, and they know how despicable that stuff is. And they see you not engage in that. And they see that. So I'm really trying to not, like, engage in this, because it is wrong. It is just deliberately provocative. They literally just put a line in that they're just like, oh, this thing happened. It was probably those damn stupid white people, not us blacks. We're perfect. Like, okay. You're trying to get me to say something, but I don't need to say it because you already know it's true. That's the trick. That's the real trick. I don't even need to say it. I think you already know it. I think you know it. That's good. All right. That's good. I like that. All right. The crew's been getting creative and I've been a little on edge, but that's good. You know, it was the cat because dogs don't create problems like this. All right, let's go to clip 20 here. This is Netflix. Leave the World Behind. The movie warns that you shouldn't trust white people if there's an apocalypse. Let's watch.
I'm asking for you to remember that if the world falls apart, trust should not be doled out easily to anyone, especially white people. Even Mom would agree with me on that.
Look, white people are the most trustworthy people in the world. This is my strategy. I'm not going to engage in this. Let's put this on screen. I'm not going to engage in this. This is a black woman rapping about how much she hates white people. I'm not going to engage in it. I'm going to engage in the opposite. Okay. I'm going to engage in love. We love white people. If there's any group of people you can trust, it's white people. Okay. They're trustworthy. They're upstanding. They'll help you out. They'll change your tire, give you the shirt off their back. Do you know how generous and good white people are? And if you're white and you're listening to me, keep it up. Keep it up, buddy. Be worthy of your race. You got a high standard to live up to, white people. Okay. Should we go to 36? I almost want to pull in, Ibram X. Kendi wants to argue with me. Well, maybe I'll pull it in later. I have a video that I did. Because again, this is not anything new. It's all in the same move. It's all in the same oeuvre. It's not even the right word. It's all in the same zeitgeist. Is this tear down Western society, tear down Western civilization, tear down the people who built Western civilization, destroy the children of Western civilization to therefore destroy Western civilization, destroy white people. I mean, it's been a very prominent theme for a very long time. And there was this YouTube account called The Cut, and they made a video where they asked black people, what are white people superior at? And it was just a compilation of black people insulting white people. And it was disgusting, frankly, and horrifying. And again, just no other race would ever accept this. And so, you know, the responses can be one or the other. You've got black person after black person on TV going, what are white people superior at? Smelling bad. Like, literally, that's what they were saying. And so the response could be to go back at them like that. Go, oh, you got some stereotypes about white people you want to address? Let's talk about stereotypes about black people, shall we? You get out your mile-long parchment to start reading through. That's one option. I went the other way, and I recut the whole thing to make it sound like they were being very nice about white people, because that's actually what we want to see. So maybe I'll pull that in a little bit. You can find it on YouTube. I believe you can find it on YouTube. Maybe they've taken it down. They might have taken it down by this point. But I'm on YouTube at Moonbase Live, by the way. YouTube.com/@MoonbaseLive. Let's go to 36. Here's Ibram X. Kendi, noted racist idiot with a lime green, neon green shirt and the hairdo of a elderly black woman, discussing with us why white people is bad. Y'all, let's watch.
I don't think white people worldwide have really reckoned with how much their own personal identity is shaped by constructions of whiteness, and how much that construction of whiteness prevents white people from connecting to humanity.
I'm sorry, what? So that was at a premiere for a Netflix show. So that's how this is all tied in. That's the type of person. And Netflix is celebrating and rewarding. You know what they're doing here? Do you see what they're doing here? Do you see what the plus size ladies at Target are getting into? This is called connecting with humanity. Okay. This is what our white constructs keep us away from. They're connecting with humanity. Okay. You know what also stops you from connecting with humanity? Pants. clothes that stay on your body. These are constructs of the white race that keep us separate from the larger mass of humanity who's engaged in connecting with each other in this way. Again, why do we let people say this about, like, why do we let people talk about us this way? Why are these people supported? Why is this a thing that's allowed? And again, it's only going to backlash. It's only going to come back and bite them in the ass, because there's a movement happening right now. There is a snowball rolling down the hill that's going to collide with the modern world in a way that is going to be spectacular. Okay? That snowball, that little impetus now that is becoming an irresistible onslaught, is called white identity. It's called white people rejecting the slander, rejecting the blood libel, rejecting the unearned and, frankly, completely inverted hatred we've been saddled with, where all of our goodness is turned against us, where all of our accomplishments are decried as hatred. Who destroyed slavery worldwide? The English. Who gets blamed for slavery? The English. There's a certain point that white people in, you know, in mass, a critical mass of white people are not going to stand for this anymore. Now, the way this is portrayed by the non-white people is that's dangerous. That's everybody, white people just start killing everybody. It'll be the Nazis. I mean, if white people are allowed to be friends with each other, the Nazism is a hop, skip, and jump away, right? Like, that's how they present it. In reality, who doesn't want white people in charge? Everybody wants white people in charge. That's why they all come to our countries. Why would they come to our countries if they didn't want white people in charge? Yeah, here's a racist idiot who, by the way, was just caught as part of the one of the many Minnesota scams, immigration scams, that have bilked something like $800 million from American taxpayers. Ilhan Omar, here's what she has to say about white people. Let's watch this.
And so the idea that is a white nation that needs to be preserved is a fascinatingly disgusting view, because this country is one for the many.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay. But we should kick her out of our country. She shouldn't be here. We should deport her. It's insulting that she is not gone from this country. She should be denaturalized, she should be stripped of her citizenship, and she should be sent back to Somalia forever. Honestly, why would anybody put up with this? And again, people might get the wrong idea about this, especially if they aren't aware of just how prevalent this mindset is, just how horrifying that. First of all, shed your biases, okay? You have been programmed by an anti-white media, an anti-white establishment that has been indoctrinating you for your entire life to have a Pavlovian response to the idea of whiteness. You're supposed to reject it and be scared of it. It's supposed to make you uncomfortable and kind of anxious. You got to get over that. You got to get over that. You got to see this just like anybody else sees this, just like anybody of any race sees what's going on here. Nobody would stand for this, and you wouldn't do it to them. So you do not have to stand by and let other people do it to you. Can you imagine, if you're listening to me right now, as you're, and you're a white person that thinks like, oh, Harrison's going a little hard on that. Can you imagine going to another country and saying, you don't deserve this, I do. You didn't build this, I did. Your country actually belongs to everybody, by which I mean me. Would you do that to somebody else? You wouldn't do that. Nobody would do that to anybody. She does. The only people that's done to is white people. Why? Why do you stand for it? Nobody else would, and you wouldn't expect them to. And you wouldn't find them hateful. You wouldn't find them, you know, outrageous if a white person went to their country and said, actually, your country belongs to us white people. And they said, get the hell out of here. You'd say, yeah, good. They should. Don't fall for it. Don't fall for it. And don't let them convince you that your existence is bad. Okay? See, white people can connect with humanity better than anyone. Let's go to clip 31 here. It's not me saying this. It's not me telling you and imagining some sort of white consciousness rising. It is rising. It's only going to accelerate. And the beautiful thing is, it's not going to lead to violence. It's not going to lead to Nazism if it's treated with respect. Now, if you keep pushing white people and keep demonizing us, and every time we try to stand up for ourselves, we get called a Nazi, guess what? You're going to make everybody Nazis. What should happen is we should actually live up to the ideals that are espoused by the hateful morons when they're, you know, trying to convince you that they're on the good side. Colorblind meritocracy, you know, just anybody can do anything. If that was the case, I wouldn't have a problem with it because honestly, I have faith in white people that will succeed. If we're not being discriminated against, if we're not being disadvantaged constantly, if we're not being the target of hatred all the time, white people will thrive. We will dominate. We don't need to have explicit rules keeping us on top. We just need a fair playing field. That's all we need. That's all we're asking for. And then we can all live together in happiness and white people can thrive and black people, everybody can thrive. But if you keep pushing white people, it's only going to get bad. So genuinely, let's let white people thrive. Let's go to this video.
If you look at the numbers, white people just need to look out for each other. It's a point of necessity right now in our time in history. If we were, you know, doing extremely well, I could say, yeah, you could have multicultural societies. It's fine. White people are, you know, the majority population in the world, but that's not the case. It's Chinese and black people.
Every group has this in-group preference, but when white people start to express that same idea, they'll hit you with all the ists and isms. That's racist. That's white supremacy. They don't think that because they're being moral about it. They think that because they don't want white people to take control of their own destiny.
This realization that white people are going through is part of the antithesis to their whole system. Their power structures are aligned as such so that white people are never supposed to be the creators of their own destiny, the captains of their own ship.
I want the people in my society to be the best that they can be. I want people to hold me to a standard too. And we haven't really held white people to a standard. We've said, well, you're a fucking piece of shit, racist. Your ancestors were evil. So what kind of standard is that supposed to maintain? There isn't one. So look at us. We're lost. And we're just now rediscovering parts of what we see as like the truth. And we're like, well, hold on a second. What about this? What about that? And they're like, nope, don't look at that. You're a racist. But then I speak to people like you. You're thinking the same exact thing. It's happening. It's here.
It's happening. It's here. Again, that was just a, you know, casual conversation between some young white fellas. And what they're saying is completely true and accurate. And again, it's not even about white versus black. It's not about white people versus anybody. It's about rejecting oppression and discrimination where it exists now, which is against white people. And if we lived in a world that discriminated against black people, I'd support them. And on that note, let's go to clip 33 here. 33, this is a 40-year-old man whose life has been changed by Charlie Kirk. Let's watch.
Man, I'm starting to realize at the big age of 40, I just may be conservative. Hear me out. So after hearing all the hate and all the negativity from this Charlie Kirk death coming from the liberal side, man, that just doesn't align with my belief system. It just don't. I cannot put myself in a category of people that have that much hate in their heart. Like, it's absolutely insane. And man, just like a lot of black people, we grew up voting straight Democrat because that's what our parents told us to do. That's what somebody else told us to do. But as I'm older now and I read the Bible for myself and I'm listening to both sides, I'm like, man, I cannot align myself or call myself a liberal or be on the left side of things when everything that I read from the Bible is showing me to be more conservative. Like, as a believer in Christ, we are supposed to follow Jesus. I mean, Jesus would not be a liberal. I'm sorry. He just won't. And I'm sorry if this offends anybody. Hey, man, that's on you. Read the Bible, man. Like, what side really aligns with conservative or liberal? Like, what side? I don't know, man. It's a lot of division going on right now. It's a lot of hate. I'm not for it, man. I'm not for politics at all, but dang, it's just sad to see all what's going on in the day. But y'all be blessed, man.
Embrace the light, embrace love, embrace Christ, put Jesus first, like he says, read the Bible. Anybody can do it. Anybody can embrace love. Anybody can reject this division and this hatred against white people. You can reject it right now, no matter what color you are.
Yeah, the Last Stand Super Sale. InfoWars could be shut down as soon as next week, today or tomorrow, actually, or even today. That's why we are launching this Last Stand Super Sale to fund the next operation and keep us in the fight in the information war. Buy any supplement at theyellowshowstore.com that's still funding InfoWars and get another bottle free while supplies last. That's a huge, biggest sell we can do. Plus, get 20% off store-wide. Woo! We've never done a sale. Actually, I'm reading this now. I've been so busy. I looked at the sale. This is the biggest sale ever. We've never done a sale this big, but we need your support now more than ever. Plus, some of this stuff's a lost leader. We know when you try the Ultimate Ethylene Blue, the Shilajit, the Ultimate Life Force, the bovine colostrum, we got the best. If we have 80%+ reorder rates on this stuff, nobody's got that, folks. Just try it. You're supporting the broadcast, and then you're going to love it. You're going to be hooked. It's why the drug dealers hand out Oxycontin to kids on the school ground because they want to get them addicted. Well, that's poison. This is good. I just am telling you, will you please stick your toe in? The water's warm. This sale could end at any moment, so go now to thealexjonesstore.com, which I don't own, which Bigley owns, and so they're funding InfoWars and the new backup network, everything, so they can't shut that down. thealexjonesstore.com. And take advantage of this amazing sale while ensuring we will never be taken off the air, even if they shut down this operation. InfoWars is just a name, but the InfoWar goes on. Remember, you are the InfoWar. Plus, download. Now, here's the big announcement. Bigley, again, owns the Alex Jones Network, all of it. And they launched this incredible app that shot up into the top of the charts in hours after being launched. I haven't looked since last night. But, you know, used to we had the number one app, remember, until they banned it. Number one in news. You think they like that? Well, we're back, sweethearts. And, and you'll ban this app. Watch what happens. You'll get a nice little Justice Department investigation. You're in a different wheelhouse now. You go to AlexJonesApp.com. AlexJones app.com. Boy, the sound of that name. Alex Jones. The Satanists don't like it. It's like high noon to vampires. App users get special sales, promos, and discounts every day as well. But listen to the show for free, video, audio, all of it at the URL that the globalists and the pedos and the Satanists hate, AlexJonesApp.com. Be sure to get the app right now, folks, and share it right now. When you support us, when you go to the AlexJonesStore.com, you aren't just funding this information that's key to the world. You're keeping us in the fight, and the enemy cannot stand it.
I also notice your cup is stained blue on the inside.
I've been caught.
You got a little, did you find some methylene blue floating around here?
I did, man. I commandeered some from Harrison's office.
Yeah, AlexJonesStore.com. Check out the supplements we have. 25% off apparel. Methylene blue you can get for 50% off if you get a subscription and you never run out. So,
amen.
I know Stuart's going to be looking for a bottle. I'm going to go try to track one down for him while.
If you don't mind, I'm a bottle that fills. Too.
You like both. What do you like better?
You know what? I like them both.
Okay.
When I'm traveling, the pills definitely.
Yeah.
It's easier.
Yeah, it's not going to, you're not worried about it breaking open or.
Way over here, I took a couple.
Yeah.
You know, while I'm driving.
Yeah. So with driving, did you feel more alert while you were driving or?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I took a couple shots while I'm in here in lieu of coffee. You guys ran out of coffee, so I went and got some methylene blue.
That's all he needs is a little methylene blue.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
All right, welcome back, folks. This is the War Room. We'll get to the SPLC and Nick Sortor stuff here in just a second. I really don't want to spend the whole show, you know, ranting about race. I feel like I do that enough already. But what's the problem with the SPLC? Well, for one thing, their leader had posted a sticker on the wall. It was discovered in a documentary where he's actually tracking the percentage of white people in America as it declines over the years with a special little star next to 1965, since that's when the Hart-Celler Immigration Act came into law, which opened up the floodgates of immigration to non-white countries, where previously there were quotas in which Western Europeans were favored over anybody else. The Hart-Celler Act did away with that under the promise that it would not change the racial demographic composition of America. That was a lie, and ever since then, the white population of America has gone down while every other population has gone up. That's on purpose, and the SPLC is tracking that like a stock, right? That the lower the percentage of white people, the better they're doing. They track it by decade. And then when it gets closer, they're tracking it year by year. And actually, it was somebody that posted that post yesterday who was one of the accounts that was deleted last night during the big purge of X. It's all tied in together. And it's almost like this is the defining conflict right now, because it involves everything. It's all, you know, all these things are facets of the same thing that's happening, right? Netflix, anti-white, anti-Western, transgender. I mean, it's just about destroying the underlying foundations of our culture in order to make us weak and more susceptible to manipulation. Immigration has a lot to do with that as well. And then you've got Israel, and a lot of the conflict between Israel and America is the fact that Americans feel that our problems are not being dealt with while Israel has a blank check to do whatever the hell it wants, whenever the hell it wants, and it gets away with everything. And that, of course, is another sort of aspect to this racial dynamic we have going on. And I could really go through like every story that we're covering today, right? Why have we not gone after Antifa? Why is this cluster of communist agitators been allowed to fester like a cancer in our country? Well, because the ADL loves them and supports them. The same people that claim that saying it's okay to be white is hate. There's racial aspects to really any and all of this, and I've explained, you know, what underlies this many times, the idea that the people in power want a submissive and controllable populace, and they've identified that white people are the odd ones out. White people are the race most likely to act as a collective to overthrow power structures. And it's just a reality, whether it's genetic, I don't know, but it is historic. So that's what they've identified. And so that's what so much of what we see on a daily basis is about, keeping white Europeans separate from each other and preferably to the bad guys, keeping us ignorant or even hateful of our own history so that we don't follow in the footsteps of our forefathers who fought and died and struggled to free ourselves from oppression, from control, from people that don't care about us. So, like I've said a million times, and I know it's far past time that we stop defending ourselves this way, but, you know, I never used to think about race, never considered it very much. These people made it the central platform of their ideology, and when you look into it, you find out white people are awesome. And have been under attack for the better part of a century at this point. Let's go to clip 18 here. This is the inversion of reality that they're trying to run with. This is the attempt, you know, the bad guys, the PSYOP runners, if they can ignore something, they will. And this is one of the revelations that happened because the internet came about. It used to be that there was a very simple method by which they could keep a news story out of anybody's consciousness. If it didn't get picked up by a national newspaper or national television station, nobody knew about it. So you get control of those, and you can put any story down you want, crush any story you want, elevate any story you want. And that was very convenient. Then the internet came about, and suddenly people could spread their story to everybody instantly with no oversight or intervention. So what do they do to counteract that? One, they try to get censorship in. They create social media platforms to funnel everybody to then have a control mechanism by which they can dictate what is and is not popular. That's been extremely successful. But the other thing they did was they, instead of ignoring a story, would have to counteract that story. So if there's some story about the SPLC doing something bad previously, maybe it was in a local paper, then it would be ignored. But now that it gets out everywhere, they can't just ignore it. They have to go after it. And what they do is often try to preempt it or counteract it by inverting what is the reality of the story. And just, if you can't convince people you're right, just confuse them. I think that's sort of the strategy. So we're going to see that here. This woman says the exact opposite of reality. I can prove that to you. But just know it's not going to work. It's not this method of trying to discriminate against and demonize white people. It's not going to work, actually. And I think you'll see why. But here's a woman talking about Caucasian men. Caucasian You know, Caucasian's a PSYOP, right? Where are the Caucasus? The Caucasus Mountains? Okay. So Asian people, where are they from? Asia? Got it. Africa? Who comes from there? Africans? Great. Europeans, where do they come from? What do we call them? Caucasians. Why wouldn't you call them Europeans? Has anybody thought about, anybody ever think about this? It's just like this type of stuff. We just say Caucasian. That's the word, right? No other race has been deracinated like that. Oh, actually, we're going to go to what we think might be the historic point that somebody like you may have come about. It's like, well, they're from Europe. They should be called Europeans. From Africa, they should be called Africans. But no, it's white people alone that have this weird designation about some mountain range that somebody came from at some point. The language, all this, it's all like, you really have to understand the war against white people has been waged for 200 years. Let's go to this woman talking about Caucasian men.
You know why good old Pete only wants Caucasian men in the military? They're the easiest to manipulate. Don't want to be training up those who have had to overcome adversity. Absolutely not. But white men, they've never had to deal with it. They don't even know that they're being oppressed. So they'll just blindly follow.
Not going to say that. I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to say it. I'm going to be very nice. Caucasian men are the easiest to manipulate because they've never had to come through adversity. Yeah, what adversity have women had to get through exactly? You were stay-at-home moms and you came over that adversity by becoming wage slaves, by becoming, worthless whores that nobody would want to marry or have babies with. What was the adversity? Being a decent human being, you had to get over that. Again, I'm not going to talk about the adversity that, black people came over. That was actually just, a bunch of white people going to war with other white people to free them, sacrificing themselves to win, freedom for them on their behalf. We're not going to talk about that. I'm not going to talk about the so-called adversity that they, overcame during Jim Crow, the mechanism by which has led to just an absolute destruction of the entire black community. I'm not going to do any of that. I am going to explain that she is literally 100% the opposite of right. Like, she's not just wrong. She's saying the inversion of the truth. Homath brought this up on X. It's Homath on X. It is Homath, rather, on X. Here's a graph that shows who's easy to manipulate. Only one group does not conform to, parentheses, whatever CNN says. And it's not just white males. It's conservative white males. Hierarchy plus individualist equals let leaders lead, get your hand out of my pocket. This is the combo that they fear, folks. Appreciating and respecting hierarchy while being dead set on individualism. That's the secret sauce that has allowed Europeans to dominate the world. That's why they target us. They can't have control if we're around. The effect is so strong that even the non-high white males are farthest away from conformity among conformists, showing that they know the truth, but say what they must to gain acceptance from the herd. See how their line leans towards zero. Once again, leftist women speak with the precise opposite of reality when they can do so without consequence. They know the truth and they are lying. If they were just stupid, they would say all random BS, but they always say the opposite of the truth because they know what the truth is. Now, this is a chart judging whether people believe in global warming. How much risk do you believe global warming poses to human health, safety, or prosperity? You'll see that clustered together, right near four, are all the free thinkers. All the independent people who have gotten over adversity and think for themselves, they all happen to believe exactly the same thing, which, by the way, is a lie. It's a lie. So, what this chart is judging is not so much about the factual reality of climate change. What's being judged here is the willingness of a demographic to accept things uncritically, to believe what they're told by authorities. and you'll see, let's go back to the chart. White hierarchical individualist males are the only outlier, and they're way over there on one, right? So, you know, you go to white people and you go, does global warming pose a health to human safety or prosperity? And the white guy goes, I don't think so. I think it's kind of like a scam. Actually, I think it's a giant scam. Meanwhile, the other four peaks we have are non-HI, so HI is the hierarchy and individualist. They line pretty closely with white female, minority male, and minority female, both align with the white female and the non-hierarchical male. So it's not just white guys, it's white guys with conservative values. White guys with conservative values are the outliers of humanity. Maybe that's what they mean. Maybe that's what connecting with humanity means. It means that you're like a herd animal. Maybe that's what he's describing. Maybe that's what white people have an inability to do. We have a hard time conforming to lies when we know the truth. We have a really hard time going along with the herd when the herd is heading off a cliff. We tend to be the outliers. We tend to be the people not going along with the herd when it's not correct, when what the herd believes is wrong. We tend to stand up against it. And you know what contributes to that directly? Testosterone. So, I mean, again, Dwight Schrute, the most dangerous being the world has ever created, the white man. The most dangerous and powerful and terrifying creature ever to walk the earth, the Christian white male. So, while we've been talking about race for a long time, it's not really about race. I'll go to one more really brilliant thought by a guy named Darth Powell at Vlad the Inflator on X. It's not so much about race as it is about control, about culture, about, well, genetics as well. But it's about what informs the motives of the globalists. Why do they want to lower our testosterone? Why do they want to destroy the nuclear family? Why do they want to destroy European culture and history? Why do they want to replace white people with non-white people? Why do they do anything that they do? This is the point. It's not just about race. Race is a major leverage point, inflection point, whatever you want to call it. Absolutely. But there's a reason that they do all of these things. It's because they want you weak. They want you controllable. It all goes back to control. It all goes back to control, folks. And it really is as simple as that. This is from a Vlad the Inflator on X. Why are they trying to kill European culture? Well, European culture equals foundation of modern liberty. Western Europe birthed ideas like individual rights, free markets, constitutional government, scientific method, abolition of slavery. Those traditions empowered citizens to resist kings, empires, and elites. A confident, cohesive European Western culture is harder to control because it carries an anti-authoritarian streak. Globalist elites prefer managed populations. The WEF and similar bodies push a model where nations hand power to supranational institutions like the UN, IMF, central banks, corporate boards. Independent nations with strong cultural identity, e.g. European nations with pride in history, are obstacles to that. Undermining cultural confidence makes those nations more pliable. 3. Weaponizing guilt. By painting Europe's legacy as uniquely evil, slavery, colonialism, elites sap cultural pride. Guilt narratives make Europeans and their descendants less willing to defend their traditions, easier to push to mass immigration, global governance, ESG, DEI mandates. Meanwhile, non-Western powers aren't burdened with this guilt narrative, China and the Gulf states, so they expand influence without apology. And you know, again, that only works on Europeans because we are, like, uniquely empathetic, to be honest with you. It doesn't work on other people. I mean, maybe it would. Maybe with, like, decades of softening them up, it would work. But for the most part, try going to some African country and going, oh, for diversity, we love if you'd let white people control your country. They're going to say, get the hell out of here. Shut the hell up. What the hell are you talking about? Go to an Arab country and go, actually, you know, while everybody had slavery, you had really brutal slavery where you castrated the boys. And, you know, you trafficked in millions of Europeans a year, and you should feel bad for that. They're going to laugh in your face. They don't give a damn. You try to guilt them. They don't care. Why would they care? You know, they won, you lost. Big deal with it. That's their attitude. Europeans, we're nice, we're soft, we want everybody to get along. We think everybody thinks like us. They don't. They really don't. And that's, you know, kind of a sad thing. I actually like Western culture quite a bit. And I've been over this before, where it's like, they want me to feel bad about my ancestors winning. Why? Why would I feel bad about that? My grandfather was a football player, and he was mean. He was very mean. This was back in the day when they didn't have face masks. They had leather helmets and like metal spikes on their cleats, like metal cleats on their shoes. And he would like step on people's hands. He'd break people's ribs. He was brutal. He was a brutal dude. Now, some weirdo came up to me and was like, your granddad hurt my granddad on the football field. My response to him is, your granddad is a bitch. My granddad won because he's better than yours. Deal with it. You want me to feel bad about what my ancestors did? My ancestors were awesome. And better than yours. Again, don't you want to just like tell these people to go F themselves? I mean, isn't that the correct response? You want me to feel shame about my ancestors? What? I'm sorry. You ever seen Braveheart? you ever seen any of these old shows they have with, on the Old West? That's my ancestors. Those are my ancestors. I don't feel bad about a damn thing they did. I think, frankly, they should have gone harder in certain cases. Okay, so we've laid out some of what they believe. It continues, divide and neutralize. Internal division, race, gender, class resentment keeps Western nations turned inward. When people fight each other, they don't challenge the real power structures, financial oligarchies, global corporates, unelected bureaucracies. A fractured culture is no longer a threat to centralized control. The ultimate threat is a self-confident West, a Europe or America proud of its cultural legacy. Rule of law, free inquiry, limited government, family, community would resist technocratic globalism. So instead, elites encourage cultural amnesia, tear down statues, rewrite history, glorify victimhood, push equity over merit. The results, the population feels unmoored, guilty, and ready to accept a new global set of values from above. European culture is treated as a threat precisely because it carries the DNA of resistance as a to central control. Destroying its confidence via guilt, division, cultural erosion makes way for a managed globalized order where elites face less pushback. It's true. It's absolutely true. Again, you cannot believe me. It ain't me that's saying it. It's them. It's the people in power that believe this. The people in power don't believe that they are under threat from a collective India. They just don't. They don't think they're under threat from being usurped or, you know, dethroned by Africa or China. They just don't. If they did, that's who they would be trying to destroy. No, it's the cultures, the nations, and the people who came up with the very concepts that allow for the, you know, generative concept of liberty. And that is extremely valuable. That's what they hate. That's what they're trying to destroy. So this is a message not for white people, but for everybody of every race, color, and creed to understand that engaging in this anti-white crusade is destroying yourself. For the millionth time, there's a reason that the Smithsonian came out with a chart of things that are aspects of white culture that are all good. They're all great things that you would suggest for your friends and family to uphold. Picking yourself up by your bootstraps. Being on time, committing to something until the end. It's literally just a list of virtues that keep people free, that keep people responsible. Because remember, liberty is responsibility. Liberty is not a license to do anything. It is a necessity to do the right thing. It is an obligation to do the right thing. So if you don't have morals, you can't have liberty. So you have to have the morals. You have to have the, you know, internal drive to uphold liberty because you value liberty. If they can associate all of that with whiteness and demonize whiteness, then it is a complete inversion of reality and it gets you to reject the very things that make you strong, independent, and unbowed. And a lot of people recognize this, and God bless them when they do. Again, you don't, it's not actually about whiteness. White people sort of, you know, embody this throughout history and, you know, establish these concepts, but anybody can adopt them. That's the beauty of them. That's the beautiful thing about them, actually. We got some breaking news here from Hamas with a tweet from Trump. So this is just breaking. Important statement on Hamas's response to U.S. President Trump's proposal. Out of a keenness to end the aggression and genocide being carried out against our steadfast people in the Gaza Strip and stemming from national responsibility and in defense of constraints, rights, and higher interest of our people, or constants, rights, and other higher interests of our people, the Islamic Resistance Movement, Hamas, has conducted in-depth consultations within leadership institutions, broad consultationship with Palestinian forces and factions, and consultations with brothers, mediators, and friends in order to reach a responsible position in dealing with U.S. President Donald Trump's plan. After thorough study, the movement has made its decision and conveyed the following response to the mediators. Hamas appreciates the Arab, Islamic, and international efforts, as well as the efforts of U.S. President Donald Trump, calling for an end to the war on the Gaza Strip, the exchange of prisoners, the immediate entry of aid, the rejection of the occupation of the Strip, and the rejection of the displacement of our Palestinian people from it. Within this framework, and in a manner that achieves an end to the war and full withdrawal from the Strip, the movement announces its approval of releasing all occupation prisoners, both living and remains, according to this exchange formula contained in President Trump's proposal, with the necessary field conditions for implementing the exchange. In this context, the movement affirms its readiness to immediately enter through its mediators into negotiations to discuss the details. The movement also reaffirms its approval to hand over the administration of the Gaza Strip to a Palestinian body of independence, parentheses, technocrats. That's interesting. The movement also reaffirms its approval to hand over the administration of the Gaza Strip to a Palestinian body of independence, parentheses, technocrats, based on Palestinian national consensus and supported by Arab and Islamic backing. That's strange, to be honest with you. It's a very odd thing for them to include, but okay. As for other issues included in President Trump's proposal concerning the future of the Gaza Strip and the inalienable rights of the Palestinian people, this is tied to the collective national position and in accordance with relevant international laws and resolutions to be discussed within a comprehensive Palestinian national framework in which Hamas will be included and will contribute with full responsibility, the Islamic resistance movement, Hamas. Okay, so that sounds like an official, full-fledged adoption of the Trump peace plan. Now we have a response from Trump on Truth Social here. Based on the statement just issued by Hamas, I believe they are ready for a lasting peace. Israel must immediately stop the bombing of Gaza so that we can get the hostages out safely and quickly. Right now, it's far too dangerous to do that. We are already in discussions on details to be worked out. This is not about Gaza alone. This is about long-sought peace in the Middle East. Well, I think that's great. I think that's wonderful. I think that's beautiful. I'm a little bit still suspicious of the method by which the administration of Gaza is slated to be handed out to technocrats. Remember, Tony Blair has ambitions to be in charge of this. Donald Trump supposedly will be the chair of the so-called peace board over Gaza. But this could be a major movement towards a genuine and long-lasting era of peace in the Middle East. And that is a beautiful thing.
Well, 48 hours ago, our sponsor, Bigly, launched Alex Jones app. Go to alexjonesapp.com and go right to the Apple Store. It's number one in the world in news, surpassing X, and is racing into the top 100 of total apps in the world. Great job, everybody. This is a real shot across the bow. For the censors, that is a big deal. I mean, we're ahead of Disney. We're ahead of Uber. We're ahead of everything. We're ahead of X. Number one in news in the world. Takes years to do that with an app. We've been number one before when they banned us in 2018. That took 5-6 years to get to that. Number one in 48 hours. Incredible job. Keep sharing the feed. You can't search it. They don't let you search the app, which every other app you can find. But you just go to alexjonesapp.com, and that takes you right to the subpage of the Apple Store. It's totally free right there, alexjonesapp.com. Every guest we've interviewed in studio, I've given our ultramethylene blue to, and they've all been blown away. Ladies and gentlemen, this isn't hype. All our supplements are great and have amazing health effects, but this one hits 99% of people within 30 minutes, and the long-term effects are even more amazing.
So secure your ultramethylene blue now, the most powerful you can get on the market at thealexstore.com, and fund the tip of the spear in the fight for liberty and supercharge your own personal life. Believe me, if you don't take action and get it, you will never know how amazing it is. Over 99% of people have had incredible effects. You owe it to yourself right now to try ultramethylene blue, exclusively available at thealexstore.com.
Phone lines for your calls today. Crews taking bets on how long this peace agreement with Hamas lasts, or if it even gets to the level of these discussions. I think it's great. I think we can pat ourselves on the back for this. I think that we have sent a pretty resolute message to the Trump administration that they cannot continue to be Israel's bitch like this. I think that is finally percolated up and they realize like this is unsustainable. I never thought Trump was completely controlled by Israel. A lot of his decisions recently are sort of inexplicable without that being the case. But I don't think this was what Israel wanted. I think Israel wanted to ethnically cleanse Gaza. I think that was always the plan. I mean, really, this almost goes back to Trump's like first week in office when he came out of nowhere. And I think he announced it live during the meeting with Netanyahu. You saw Netanyahu make the face of like, what is he doing? When he said, yeah, I'm going to take over Gaza. America's going to take over Gaza. Netanyahu was like, yeah, we'll have to talk about that. That's an interesting idea. Good idea, Trump. Wow. That's a good. Clever. Like, and he really was not into it. I think this goes back to then. But of course, the movement against Israel has been just absolutely dominating, basically, and forcing Israel to sort of make mistakes. And I think Israel realized it was kind of unsustainable at a certain point, but I don't think this is what they wanted. Because it guarantees the Gazans have a place to stay. It says in the agreement that they will not be forced to leave and anybody who wants to return will be allowed to. So that would be huge. And it'd be really huge if this eventually led to a establishment of a real Palestinian state. It would really be appropriate. I mean, that should be the outcome of what Israel's done over the last 2 years. So that's interesting. Very interesting. So nearly 2 years on, we're 4 days from the 2 year anniversary of October 7th, 2023. It appears that this round of the conflict may be coming to an end, however brief that may be. All right, we're going to move on now. We're going to talk about other stuff. I'm going to give out the phone lines. Should I talk about? Whatever. There's more racial. I mean, there's so much racial stuff. It just is mind-blowing. But we'll move on. Yeah, we'll move on. but if we wanted to, we could. But if we wanted to, there's a lot more to say. Basically, this teacher got like fired or is like being punished because she sang a birthday song to a black kid. And the birthday song is like a parody where it's like, happy birthday to you. You live in a zoo. You look like a monkey and you act like one too. Right? It's like a clever little birthday song that I remember singing that when I was a little kid. You're calling your friend a monkey. It's funny, isn't it? But it was a black kid that she did it to, so now she's in trouble. And the mom of the black kid is like, we've had to move schools and I've had to get counseling for my child. And literally in the video, the teacher is like, do you want me to sing you the monkey song? And the kid's like, yeah. And so she sings the monkey song. And now this is a racial outrage and the NAACP is on the line and all this stuff. And it's like, here's my question. Is it better to sing it or not sing it? Because if she sings that song to every kid in the class, but it gets to the black kid and she goes, well, I can't sing the monkey song. He's black. I mean, I know we sing the monkey song for kids on their birthday, but he's black. So comparing him to a monkey, like, wouldn't that be worse? It's like the guy got in trouble. The photographer got in trouble he was taking pictures for a clothing magazine, and a little black kid was wearing a shirt that said "Coolest Monkey in the Jungle." And I always thought it'd be funny to do a skit where it's like, you know, the photographer taking pictures, and then the kid comes out with the shirt on. He's like, "Ooh, I don't know. I don't know about this. Monkey, black person. I mean, we're all thinking it." You know, it's like, what? No, what? Who thinks like that? Who thinks like that? So, I mean, that's, you know, for the teacher, okay, you sing happy birthday, and then you sing the happy birthday monkey song, and you sing it to all the kids, but when it gets to the black kid, you don't sing the song? Because, you know, black people, monkeys, I mean. It's like, isn't that more offensive? Isn't it less offensive to treat the black kid like every other kid? Because black people aren't like monkeys, so there's no problem in singing a silly song?
Hey, the Alex Jones app, AJN Live, is now dominating at the Apple Store. After launching the app just a couple days ago, we are now the second most downloaded app in the world. And as y'all know, the Democrats and the deep state are, they've done everything they can to shut us down. Now it's up to you to make us number one. So download the Alex Jones app right now at alexjonesapp.com. And let's make AJN Live the number one app in the world.
Download the brand new app. It's rising to the top of the charts. Give it a go. Download the AJN Live app right now over at alexjonesapp.com. Head on over there right now. Stay in touch with us, because you never know when that front door will be locked. So we want to stay in touch. Have a great weekend. Alex is next.
Join Harrison Smith in the War Room, the council chamber for the discussions that define our time.
Say, live and let die.
Live and let die. People are already calling in. I haven't even given the number out yet. Too quick off the mark. Give us a call. We're taking your calls this hour. It is the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. The number to dial, 1-877-789-2539. 1-877-789-2539. Taking your calls now. And on the War Room, people are already calling in. So we'll go to those in just a second, but we'll let a few more trickle in here. We've got, I've got some news to go through and go through some headlines here. Pretty interesting stuff. First of all, this isn't showing up on my screen here, but this is it from New York Times. Democrats pull away from AIPAC, reflecting a broader shift. And I've been highlighting this recently quite a few times, where it's mostly Democrats will be doing a town hall or something, and they'll say, "I will never take AIPAC money." And they get this big cheer. Everybody's so happy to hear that. And so, and this is what we've been saying for a very long time. We have to make AIPAC so unpopular that it is, you know, worse to get their endorsement than it is to reject them. So with their endorsement, you get a lot of money, you get a lot of connections, you get a lot of institutional support, and you get the AIPAC, you know, seal of approval. That's very valuable in politics. What has to be more valuable is the people who don't want their representatives beholden to a foreign state. And that has to be so popular, that mindset has to be so popular and profound and widespread that people choose to reject AIPAC because the support they'll get is more valuable from the people than it is from AIPAC. So this is wonderful to see. The Democrats seem to recognize this. Now, Republicans are doing everything we can. They can. It's not me. It ain't me, folks. But Mike Johnson, the blue blood, deep state Republican scumbags, Lindsey Graham, Ted Cruz types, they think that it's very weird. It's very weird. They think this is like an opportunity to like corner the Israel market. And it's like, guys, this is a rotten thing. You don't want this. You don't want, but for some reason, like Republicans are just, the ones in office, they're retarded. And I don't know how to explain it. So it's like Republicans in office are just totally blind to, deaf to, or like oppose everything that young people care about. And it doesn't mean you have to support the, like, all of the ideas of young people. We have our own reasons to not support these things or to have policies to confront certain things. And, you know, the two obvious examples are Israel and socialism, right? people, young people especially, are hopeless economically. They've looked ahead and they go, it doesn't matter how hard I work, I'll never be able to afford what my parents afforded. I may never even be able to afford a house at all, and it's only getting worse. And they speak out about this, and they ask questions about this, and they feel betrayed because they've fulfilled their end of the bargain. They've gone to school. They've gotten good grades. They went to college. They got debt. They expected to be rewarded for that with a job so they can be a functional and productive member of society. Instead, they're spat on. They look around and go, what the hell? I thought we had a deal here. And the Republicans just say, F you, pull yourself up from your bootstraps, idiot. Go to trade school next time. Meanwhile, the socialists are going, we hear you. It's tough out there. You know why? Capitalism. You know why? White people. We love you. We're your friends. We get how hard it is, and it is hard, and we can help you, and we can solve your problems, and we can fix what's wrong with the society, and we can reward you for supporting us. Just join the socialists. Who do you think they're going to go to? Which side do you think they're going to pick? Obviously, they're going to pick the side that is giving them even a semblance of concern and care and empathy. Obviously. And I mean, you have to become socialist to support. What you need to do is take the American approach that says our capitalism, quote unquote, as it exists now, is crony capitalism. Everything's being bought up by these major supranational organizations like BlackRock, State Street, Vanguard. They need to be busted up. We need a monopoly trust busting movement on this side of things. And we need to recapture the American dream, which was one income supporting an entire family, owning a house, owning multiple cars, and having kids and going on vacation a couple times a year. That's the American dream that we need to reclaim. People don't get that. They don't have that. They don't think they'll ever experience that. And we're spitting in their face and telling them, you know, tough crap. As we import a million Indians to take the high-paying jobs that the Americans earned, but the Indians cheated their way through some school in India to get. I mean, it's absurd. Who do you think they're going to choose? When it comes to Israel, they're seeing the brutality, the inhuman activity, the just vicious behavior of the Israelis, and the leadership of the Republicans are meeting with Israelis or rabbis or whoever and promising to exclude anybody that's not pro-Israel from our ticket. The Republican Party will absolutely never endorse anybody that is not a scum-sucking slave of Israel. Okay, so the Republicans tying ourselves to Israel is a suicide pact between us. Why are we doing it? And again, I'm making an argument that I've been making for at least 2 years at this point, because it was obvious from the very beginning. I guess it was a vain hope, but it was just so obvious how unpopular Israel is, and yet both parties are in favor of it. And it was like, this is a wonderful opportunity for a Republican to go, hey, I'm a nationalist. Palestinians deserve their own nation. Hey, I love peace. I'm against war. I don't care if the Palestinians are Arab. I don't care if they're Muslim. They don't deserve to be murdered. And that's a stance I can stand on. And we have a few. Thomas Massey's one of them. Marjorie Taylor Greene is one of them. Libertarians tend to be more anti-war than the conservative establishment Republicans. Which is why, you know, AIPAC is forming Kentucky MAGA to try to take out Massey with millions upon millions of dollars and is failing to do so. Why are Republicans so stupid? Why, in this one instance, when it comes to Israel, do they just have no ability to think for themselves? It's really disgusting. And it feels in a lot of ways like a trick. You know, Jewish people in America vote like 85% for the Democratic Party. So it's just weird that like the party that most Jewish people have voted for their whole lives, the Democrats, are the anti-Israel party. And Republicans, like, do we think we're going to capture that coveted, you know, 2% population vote? First of all, we're not. That's not how this works. And second of all, how would that be worth it? I mean, it's just so stupid. It is so unbelievably stupid what we're doing. Again, we don't need to embrace Hamas to say, actually, there's a nationalistic argument here. There's an argument about national sovereignty that supersedes any concerns about this battle in the desert. But it's deeper than that. It's about the technocratic control system that Israel has deployed on Gaza that they would deploy on us the second that they, you know, work out the kinks. So it's just infuriating. So Democrats are pulling away from AIPAC, and they'll succeed wildly because of this. Republicans, for some, again, godforsaken reason, think that this is like an opportunity for us to like, oh, Democrats are running away from AIPAC. Now we can get all their support. And it's like, what? Everybody hates them. You don't want their support. So again, we're being outflanked by the Democrats because the absolute morons in charge are just suicidally dedicated to a foreign state, an ethno state, just in total contravention of everything else they claim to believe. So stupid. So unbelievably stupid. Meanwhile, China, behind massive nationwide sim farm network that directly threatens American critical infrastructure, from Steve Baker and Joseph M. Hanneman on Blaze News, millions of linked SIM cards carry out surveillance, target leaders for harm, and should be considered acts of war. The discovery of SIM farms that threaten cellular networks in New York City is only the tip of a massive nationwide network run by the Chinese Communist government that poses an immediate threat to critical American infrastructure and has led to terrorist attacks, including hoax SWAT raids on the homes of national leaders. Blaze News has learned sources in the Department of Homeland Security and the U.S. intelligence community said these SIM card networks were operating in the United States as early as 2004. They've proliferated exponentially since President Donald J. Trump was reelected to the presidency in November 2024. They're calling it a, quote, absolute act of war. Which it would be. Which it probably is. Now, how they figured out that this was China is not entirely clear at first blush. The SIM networks were put in place and managed by China's Ministry of State Security, an ultra-secretive massive espionage agency that has grown in prominence and global activity in recent years, according to the journal China Leadership Monitor. The MSS employs more than 800,000 people, nearly double the Soviet KGB at its peak. Several officials who spoke with Blaze anonymously said the establishment and use of this destructive network by China should be considered an act of war. The potential threat to America would be second only to a thermonuclear war, one source said. So I'm suspicious of this, to be honest with you. I don't know why they would be anonymous if they were presenting this. If it's true, why would they be anonymous? I mean, why are there not official statements about this if this is true? I'm a little bit suspicious of this. I don't know if this is entirely true. On the other hand, it absolutely could be true, and there's absolutely no reason to think it isn't, because, by the way, we've allowed potentially hundreds of thousands of Chinese agents into our country during Joe Biden's presidency. So yet another act of deliberate, intentional, treasonous sabotage at the hands of the Biden administration, working in cooperation with our greatest geopolitical enemy, China, to allow the establishment of these terrorist cells in America that apparently are working and setting up the infrastructure they need to take down our entire digital network framework, everything. So glad we found it. Glad we found out about it, I guess. Crazy. Completely crazy. I just don't know why they would be. Like, it says recently these SIM farms are believed to be responsible for dozens of hoax SWAT raids, including a senior U.S. Secret Service official, FBI Director Kash Patel, members of Congress, including Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, and media influencers such as Tim Pool and Stephen K. Bannon. I guess China would hate those people, I guess. I don't know. Seems weird. Seems bizarre that that's who they would be targeting. The only reason we found this network is because a senior service official was targeted for a SWAT raid, the source said. Otherwise, this investigation would not have ever been initiated. Yeah, it's not like, we've all been swatted by these people. But once they go after somebody in the system, that's when they really launch the investigation. They've launched legitimate cyber attacks against our critical infrastructure. Again, I said when this first happened that it had to be a nation state. I don't totally expect it to be China, but maybe. Who knows? But clearly this was not an independent actor. This was clearly the act of a state. I just think we have other states that are more likely. Let's go to Michael in Ohio first on line 6. I know you called in yesterday. Thanks for calling in again, Michael. You're on the air.
Hey, Harrison, how are we doing this evening?
Good, thank you.
Good, good. Hey, pleased with the show, as always. Hope to see you on the new network soon. and I can't wait for the app to come out on Android. I went to get it, and I was very disappointed it's only available on Apple right now. I was like, dang it.
It'll be coming soon. It'll be coming soon. Stay tuned for that.
Beautiful. I can't wait. So I yesterday you were talking about, you know, a solution to the voting dilemma and the absolute morons that are able to vote in this country. And I mean, I sent you a voice message on X, actually, and I don't know if you got it, but I think everybody should have to take a civics test to be a registered voter. I mean, if you have to take a civics test to be a legal immigrant to this country and know more about our government than our own citizens, there's something wrong with that, you know? And then I think if people did take a civics test and have to pass it to become registered voters, our pool of registered voters would be, you know, they'd be understanding of the Constitution and what it means and the separation of powers and all that. And I think the Constitution should be amended or something, a law created, however, but to where any elected official, I don't care, county level, state level, federal level, they sign a contract saying that they understand if they violate the, you know, their constituents' constitutional rights, they're going to be held to treason charges. And then a grand jury could be assembled out of the registered voters that we know are, you know, proficient in civics and in our country's formation to handle that. So obviously, I don't foresee us getting anything like that done, but it would have been nice for the, you know, for the founding fathers to put that in the Constitution originally. I think back then we were all so happy to have our freedom. We understood what the Constitution meant. We were not going to allow the government to take care of us. We wanted to take care of ourselves. And I feel like we've kind of flip-flopped in that aspect, you know?
Well, yeah. And, you know, I agree. You know, I like that, that you're sort of thinking outside the box. There are multiple ways to do this. Obviously, when the founders, you know, established voting, they had the Electoral College, so they did think about this a little bit, right? They also, you know, you had to be a landowner, you had to be a male, you had to be white. And, you know, but mostly it was about the landowner thing because you had to have an investment here. You had to show that you were responsible enough to handle voting. And the way they did that was they said, well, you have to own property. You have to own land. At the bare minimum, it means you are capable enough to do that. And that is sort of a de facto certification that you're not an indigent, that you're not, you know, just going to make a terrible decision because it benefits you in the immediate term, which is what they're really worried about because they'd studied how republics fall apart in places like Rome, where the corn dole became the big thing. And all these people who didn't own anything but depended on the state could be moved to vote for the state and vote the state more powers because the state would reward them by handing out somebody else's money. And that's what they really wanted to prevent early on. So that's all been sort of chipped away at over time. There are interesting ideas of how something like this could work. I don't think it's totally appropriate, but Starship Troopers has a very interesting construct of this, where everybody's a citizen and has free rights. You can protest, you can, you know, have businesses, you can own property, you have a freedom of speech, like all that's guaranteed for civilians, but they don't vote and they can't be in office. They can't have any power. And if you want to have a vote, and if you want to be a citizen, if you want to be not a civilian but a citizen, somebody who votes and can hold office and makes decisions for the country, then you have to give up everything. You have to join the army, you have to serve your time, and the time's always brutal, and it was about the sacrifice. And it didn't even matter what the sacrifice was. Like, if you weren't physically capable of going to war, then they would just have you do something else that was, like, just as stringent and difficult to achieve. And it was about the commitment. It was about saying you're not allowed to vote unless you show us that you're willing to sacrifice, you're willing to, you know, even put your life on the line, and you're willing to suffer. And only once you get through that gauntlet will you have proven that you are, you know, worthy of having the vote. Again, I don't know if that's a good, I don't think it would work here, but I've often, you know, played the game where if I was designing, you know, a system like that, what are the levels I would have where it's like, okay, civilians are maybe the lowest level and they don't have really any responsibilities, but they're protected by the law, but they don't vote and they aren't on juries. Then maybe the next level would be like a jurist. And then you're shown that you're capable of being on a jury and providing unbiased, you know, decisions based on the law. And maybe you're allowed to vote at that point. And then above that, you'd have like the citizen or the, you know, whatever else. And those are the people that run for office. I mean, and Rome was more like that too, with a senatorial class and the equites. You sort of worked your way up. And there it was also based on property. There are lots of ways to do it. I think a civic test would be fine. The reason civic tests aren't trusted now is because they can be manipulated. You can, you know, change how you grade it. The classic story from like the Deep South was they would give black people a test where every answer could be yes or no. And it was sort of how it was phrased, where you put the emphasis determined whether or not the answer was yes or no. And so somebody who didn't want somebody to vote would just check everything wrong and, you know, deny them the vote that way. So I think we'd have to be careful about that. But certainly I think democracy, like the founding fathers thought, is chaos, is rule by the majority, is not actually a good way to run a country. And that's what we're constantly moving towards. Thank you for the suggestions, Michael. Let's go to Tony in Texas now. Tony in Texas, have you been doing your part? Speaking of Starship Troopers, I'm doing my part. Have you been doing your part, Tony?
As a good citizen of Texas, I've been calling ICE up and I've been giving them hot tips on where to find illegals in the state of Texas. Well, I started off by telling them at any of the thousands of illegal day labor sites in Texas, you can nab thousands of them there. Or you can stop at any taco shack on side of the road in the morning, thousands of them there. Or you can go to any welfare office, thousands of them there. Or you can go to the hospital emergency rooms here in Texas, thousands of them there. Or you can go to the illegal alien city there above Houston, you know, Colony Ridge. There's over 100,000 of them in there. Let's start there. You could nab over 100,000. Or you could talk to Trump and tell him, hey, maybe it's time we shut down the open border policy we have with Mexico, because illegals from Mexico are flooding in across one of our international bridges right now. The border's not shut down. They just simply walk in our country and stay here. As long as they're a Mexican, they can do that. Some other guys from other countries, they got to stay in their country. But, and another thing, did you notice that Texas did not pass any laws to take any funding or benefits away from illegals in Texas? Not one law. And another thing I told them before I hung up, I said, if you go to any employment agency here in Texas and go through their records, you'll find thousands of illegals. They're hiring out the businesses.
Isn't that sick? And I mean, the numbers alone, the official number I was reading today, and these are probably even undercounting them as well, but you know, 55 million visa holders, 50 million illegal immigrants, in a population of 300 million. So one out of every three people in this country isn't a citizen, isn't an American. Half of them are illegal. Half of them are visitors. I mean, what do you think is going to happen with house prices? What do you think is going to happen with, you know, government subsidies? Like, what do you think is going to happen with everything if we were to just get 100 million people out of our country in a week? Like, what would happen? Would we collapse? Would, you know, our systems fail? No, I think everything would get better. I think absolutely everything would get better. You guys remember, do you guys ever drive around during COVID? You guys ever break quarantine and go driving on the highway when you were the only car on the highway? That's basically what we'd be dealing with, in a true mass deportation agenda. So man, they really got to step on it. They really got to make it happen. And again, I think they're trying. I'm seeing, you know, a lot of stories about them storming into apartment buildings and hauling everybody away. The only problem is you've got these local authorities interfering, you know, stopping them from doing it, letting the criminals out. At this point, what Portland, Oregon is doing is they have the Portland police standing by as Antifa attacks, you know, counter protesters. Then when ICE or whatever federal agency, the National Guard or whoever else comes in and arrests people, the Portland police have observers there to note down what happened so they can later go and charge the federal police with excessive use of force or sue them and throw them in prison. So you now have local authorities like legally trying to go to war with and destroy the lives of the federal soldiers that have been sent there to keep the peace because the local police refuse to. It's so messed up, and we absolutely need very powerful movement against all of this. We'll go back to your calls on the other side. Thanks so much for the call. Tony, remember to go to thealexjonesstore.com. Go to alexjonesapp.com, alexjonesapp.com. I think we're still number one in the app store. Let's keep it. Let's keep us there. Let's remain on top. Let's dominate the playlist just like we dominate the airwaves. We'll be back on the other side with more of your phone calls, more breaking news. Don't go anywhere, folks.
Yeah, the last stand super sale. InfoWars could be shut down as soon as next week, today or tomorrow, actually, or even today. That's why we are launching this Last Stand Super Sale to fund the next operation and keep us in the fight in the information war. Buy any supplement at theallyshowstore.com that's still funding InfoWars and get another bottle free while supplies last. That's a huge, biggest sell we can do. Plus, get 20% off store-wide. Woo! We've never done a sale. Actually, I'm reading this now. I've been so busy. I haven't looked at the sale. This is the biggest sale ever. We've never done a sale this big, but we need your support now more than ever. Plus, some of this stuff's a lost leader. We know when you try the Ultimate Methylene Blue, the Shilajit, the Ultimate Life Force, the bovine colostrum, we've got the best. If we have 80-plus percent reorder rates on this stuff. Nobody's got that, folks. Just try it. You're supporting the broadcast, and then you're going to love it. You're going to be hooked. It's why the drug dealers hand out Oxycontin to kids on the school ground because they want to get them addicted. Well, that's poison. This is good. I just am telling you, will you please stick your toe in? The water's warm. This sale could at any moment, so go now to thealexshowstore.com, which I don't own, which Bigley owns, and so they're funding InfoWars and the new backup network, everything, so they can't shut that down. Thealexshowstore.com. And take advantage of this amazing sale while ensuring we will never be taken off the air, even if they shut down this operation. InfoWars is just a name, but the InfoWar goes on. Remember, you are the InfoWar. Plus, download. Now, here's the big announcement. Bigley, again, owns the Alex Shows Network, all of it. And they launched this incredible app that shot up into the top of the charts in hours after being launched. I haven't looked since last night. But, you know, used to we had the number one app, remember, until they banned it. Number one in news. You think they like that? Well, we're back, sweethearts. And, and you know, ban this app. Watch what happens. You'll get a nice little Justice Department investigation. You're in a different wheelhouse now. You go to AlexJonesApp.com. AlexJones app.com. Boy, the sound of that name. Alex Jones. The Satanists don't like it. It's like high noon to vampires. App users get special sales, promos, and discounts every day as well. But listen to the show for free, video, audio, all of it at the URL that the globalists and the pedos and the Satanists hate. AlexJonesApp.com. Be sure to get the app right now, folks, and share it right now. When you support us, when you go to thealexjonesstore.com, you aren't just funding this information that's key to the world. You're keeping us in the fight, and the enemy cannot stand it.
I was hoping you had some of the Alex Jones ones. How is Alex?
He's great. He lost a lot of weight.
I saw he's getting like, yeah, he's ready for the next
My friend big. Sean Johnson's training him.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he gets up every morning. He works out for hours. He's lost, I think he's lost 70 pounds at this point. He looks fantastic, man.
Yeah.
He looks fantastic. He looks like he's 20 years younger. People think, this is really funny because, you know, his whole business is conspiracy theories. Conspiracy that Alex has been replaced.
Yeah.
But listen, folks, that's real Alex. I've watched every step of the way, and my friend trains him. So I can tell you for a fact, that is the real Alex Jones. Quit drinking, quit eating bad food. He's eating healthy food now. He works out every day. It's like no Ozempic, no bullshit, no shortcuts. He did it the right way. He looks great.
You find it all at thealexshowstore.com, and it funds the most hardcore patriot organization worldwide, absolutely devastating the globalists in our peaceful information war.
Holy shit, he was right about every step of the way.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Here. Schmooly highlight reel. What is he doing? But it's always unsteady. All right, we're going to go out to phone calls again. This is the final segment of the War Room for this Friday broadcast. Thanks so much for being here with us. Let me cover one more story before we go out to calls here. And it's not going to be to Rabbi Schmooly gyrating for some bizarre reason. No, it's rather this. Drop site has come out with an article revealing leaked emails between Larry Ellison and some higher-ups in Israel as they pick and choose who should be what in America. Larry Ellison vetted Marco Rubio for fealty to Israel, hacked emails reveal. That's the headline. The billionaire Oracle founder is on track to control, to take control of the American media. And he is, of course, they say the Ellison, well, they go over everything, right? He's taken over TikTok. They're taking over large swaths of the media, including CBS News, CNN, Warner Brothers, Paramount, reportedly bringing in Free Press's Barry Weiss to shape editorial direction. Most people online think she is a straight-up Israeli spy. The Ellison family is cornering the market on attention and data the same way the Vanderbilts did railroads and the Rockefellers did oil. As Wire recently characterized it, how they plan to operate that monopoly is on course to be tested out in what President Trump is calling New Gaza, a techno-dystopian free trade zone that is to be administered by a board of peace led by Trump and Ellison's longtime political and business vehicle, Tony Blair. Tony frickin' Blair. As the nation's top diplomat, Secretary of State Marco Rubio has also played a role in TikTok talks that steered the company toward Ellison after playing a lead role in as a senator in demonizing the app. He was also closely involved in the rollout of Trump's plan for Gaza's future, which hands the enclave to Blair. Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, tasked the Blair Institute in the spring with coming up with a post-war plan in Gaza, which was recently completed, the Times of Israel reported. That Rubio finds himself in such a central position is thanks in part to Ellison, who's been a major patron of the Cuban-American former senator from Florida. Ellison first vetted Rubio for his fealty towards Israel back in early 2015, according to previously unreported email correspondence reviewed by DropSite. As Secretary of State, Rubio launched an unprecedented crackdown on speech, detaining and attempting to deport critics of Israel precisely for the crime of their criticism of Israel. In early 2015, Ellison was emailing Ron Prosser, who was serving as the tail end of his time as the Israeli ambassador to the United Nations. He currently serves as the Israeli ambassador to Germany. At the time, Rubio was seen as a strong challenger to the GOP. Well, and there's something I missed earlier because it lays out again what we've been telling you the entire time. Here it is. Ellison has given or pledged more than $350 million to the Tony Blair Institute, which Blair has used to advance Ellison's vision of a marriage between government, corporate power, and tech surveillance. And what have we been saying since 2020? Well, we've been saying it since long before then, but 2020 became really obvious that the Great Reset was really the great consolidation, the great bringing in of corporate and governmental power into one power structure with no demarcation between the two. That's what Larry Ellison wants more than anything. And we've played the clip before. I retweeted it yesterday. Larry Ellison talking to Tony Blair at the World Government Summit 2025, where he explains that before you can unleash AI to control the behavior of everybody all the time, what you need first is to combine all of the data sets into one primary data set, which of course is what Palantir does. It's what they've been putting in place with Operation Stargate ever since Trump first got into office. They are working to bring healthcare, genomic sequences, real-time surveillance data all into one database where it can all be accessed and manipulated from a singular point. That is the ultimate goal of the globalists, the Tony Blairs, the Larry Ellisons, the Marco Rubios, apparently, and, of course, this Israeli diplomat who was communicating with Larry Ellison, the emails of which have now been released. And you have this from April 27th, 2015. Hi, Larry. I really enjoyed spending the afternoon and evening with you. Time flies with you. Thank you. Big hug, Ron. Who talks like that? I don't think I can say that word on the air. Sorry, the crew's asking me who talks like that. The answer starts with an F. On April 30, what's that? The French? No, not the French, no. Well, friends. Friends talk to each other like that. Yes, very good friends with each other say that, those things to each other. Prosser sent another message to Ellison to follow up, sharing his phone number and thanking him again for the evening they spent together. Wow, two, huh? Two thank yous for the evening they spent together, saying, quote, how was your conversation with Marco Rubio? Did he pass your scrutiny? Did you have a chance to talk about Israel? Would love to chat. I had a great time too, Ron. Looking forward to the next time. Larry, P.S., tell you how the dinner with Senator Rubio goes. So he says, how was this discussion? And Larry Ellison responds, hi, Ron. Great meeting with Marco Rubio. I set him up to meet with Tony Blair. Marco will be a great friend for Israel, Larry. So that's where their priorities lie. That is the, manipulation and conspiracy behind a lot of what we're seeing in our world today. So you're anti-Semitic if you know that. You're anti-Semitic and you will be kicked off of TikTok if you dare to suggest that the person that now runs TikTok got possession of TikTok by manipulating politics from all the way back in 2015 with the sole intent and purpose of prioritizing the benefit of Israel over everything else. Yeah, Oracle executives are told, love Israel, or maybe this job isn't for you. Employees who disagreed were reportedly referred to company mental health services. Oh, well, that's great. Oh, you don't like being, you know, inextricably tied to a country that's committing genocide. You have a problem with the fact that a first world super rich nation keeps another population in abject poverty in an open air prison and routinely bombs them to smithereens and kills 80% of the people they kill are children and women, and the other 20% is mostly innocent men. You aren't okay with that? You might be crazy. Wow, we're really concerned about you. No, it's not that, you know, we want to control you. It's not that, you know, we have a religious or ethnic superiority complex and any, you know, opposition to us we treat as an existential crisis, and we're going to crush you. We will crush you. We will destroy your life if you dare to stand against us. It's just that we love you so much and we're concerned about you. You know, we're really worried about you. We think you might be kind of crazy. I think you might have some personal issues you need to work out. I mean, we all know people that blame Jews for things, it's a mental illness. It has absolutely nothing to do with anything other than the problems in your own head. It's definitely not our behavior. And it could absolutely be no way a part of the, you know, just sort of endless stream of things like this that show that, yes, Israelis and American Jews work hand in hand together to rig our election for the benefit of a foreign state. That doesn't matter. It's that we think you really have a problem that medication could help fix. And if not, then you're fired and we will destroy your life. So we want you to get better. We want you to help. We want to help you. Just like how we're healing the world through Tikkun Olam. Yeah, we need to heal you. Heal you from this problem you have where you resist us. We need to help you to submit to us. Thanks, guys. Thanks. So loving and wonderful. By the way, Tucker Carlson came out with this thing saying that IDF soldiers were storming around the Pentagon, ordering people around. And Laura Loomer comes out and says, I spoke to high-level sources at the Department of War today, and they told me Tucker Carlson is lying. This never happened. Oh, well, okay, well, woof. Wow, that totally makes sense. No, that makes a lot of sense, Loomer. Great point. Laura's like, I talked to the IDF guys at the Pentagon, and they said that wasn't true. I talked to the guys in the IDF uniforms that were storming around the Pentagon, and they say Tucker's crazy. I bet. No, I bet they do. Just let me see if I got this right. Who do we believe more? Who do we trust more to be telling the truth in this instance? Is it Laura Loomer, noted Israel first, you know, sycophant, who, you know, is going to say anything that helps Israel? And in this case, just asserts, I talked to people and that never happened. Did she talk to the right people? Who did she talk to? Would these people even know if it was true? We have no idea. Okay, so is it more likely that she's making this up or somebody told her this? Like, it could be true, yeah. You know, she says what? I talked to high-level sources at the Department of War and they told me Tucker Carlson is lying. How would they know? First of all, how would they know? Second of all, would they tell you the truth if they know? I mean, it doesn't even make sense. Okay, is that more likely to be true? Or is it more likely that she's telling the truth and that Tucker Carlson, in a bout of madness and delusion, just made this up? Do you think Tucker Carlson just went on his show, looked into the camera, and just made up a story that nobody told him, that he hadn't heard, that he didn't have proof for? He just thought, he woke up in the morning, he thought, you know what I'll say today? Today I'll say something bad about Israel. What should it be? And he like rolled dice and he got like Pentagon and Iran war. Oh, I know. I'll say that during the Iran conflict that Israel's totally, it didn't have any a part of and certainly wasn't pressuring American authorities to go to war with Iran. No, I'm going to make up out of whole cloth that, the IDF is running around ordering people around in the Pentagon. Like, come on. I mean, do we really think so? I mean, but this is the problem. This is the dichotomy they put you in. Either they want you to think that either Tucker Carlson is completely insane and just lying because he just wants to. Like, he doesn't have a reason. Maybe he's being paid by Qatar. Like, okay, either Tucker Carlson is a madman that somehow nobody, like, this delusion doesn't manifest in any other way. He just has this one particular mental illness that makes him make things up to make Israel feel bad because, or look bad because he, I don't know, has, you know, has a worm in his brain. Okay, either that's the truth or Laura Loomer is lying to benefit a foreign country because she's a foreign agent operating for their benefit. I mean, those are the two. It has to be one of those. Either Tucker Carlson is a madman who just thinks it's fun to prank Israel by lying about them on his massive, biggest talk show in the world behind Joe Rogan. Either he's just using that platform to make up stories for no reason. It's just like, this is crazy. As if we don't have enough to talk about. As if he would need to make anything up. Like, what? It doesn't make any sense, Laura. We're not that dumb, darling. We're not that stupid, okay? If it's between Tucker Carlson being crazy or you being an un-American enemy lying to us to cover up for your real homeland and where your real loyalty lies, where do you think we're going to land? Stop. Just stop. You need to stop for your own benefit, okay? We're not falling for it. Nobody's falling for it. It only makes you look like a traitor. But keep calling him Tucker Carlson. I'm sure that's very effective. I'm sure that works very well. Do you think it works well? Do you think this is working? That's why I keep asking people. Every time somebody mentions Qatar on my X feed, I have to genuinely ask, do you think this is working? Are you under the impression this is convincing absolutely anyone? Because it ain't, folks. On to your calls now. Hey, look, we got a Palestinian technocrat who's called in. Thanks for calling in, Palestinian technocrat. I didn't know you existed. You're on line three. Go ahead.
Technocrat, at the beginning of the show, but once I heard you mention it, I'm all in on being that because I'm calling up Kushner and Blair. I want in. I want all in on this Gaza oceanfront property. And I know that may sound harsh, but let's see what's happening because once you get in there, hey, maybe you can get on the Lahaina property. Maybe you can get on the Pacific Palisades property. I want part of this new technocrat overlord system. I want in, and I want you to join me, Harrison.
Well, I join the technocrats. Waterfront property, Israel adjacent. I don't know. It's a pretty good deal. I think you might have a point here. We're really just the stupid ones for not going along with it, aren't we? Really, I mean, we're just being so stupid by not engaging in the wholesale destruction of entire communities so we can make a little bit of money off of it. We're so dumb, aren't we? Aren't we just so stupid? And they're so clever. Tony Blair and Larry Ellison, they're just so smart. They're so smart with how they do this, aren't they? And we're so dumb, aren't we, Palestinian technocrat?
We are. I mean, think about it, dude. Look, in the late 90s, Larry Ellison bought the island of Lanai, which is one of the 8 island chains of Hawaii. That dude owns the whole island. And People hardly even know that. The whole island.
He deserves it.
I used to live there when that. Did you know that?
You live there?
Yeah, I lived there off Maui, and Maui's a boat trip to Lanai. I used to be able to go there, but Larry Ellison bought the entire island. And so think Oprah and Bill Gates own parts of Maui? Ellison owns the entire Hawaiian island. Now I want in with Ellison. Ellison, if you need an associate to help you not get suicided, I'm your guy.
I don't think he's the one worrying about that. No, I think he's the one that orders them, actually. Yeah, he owns an island too, huh? Well, isn't that nice for him? I mean, he's contributed so much to the world, so of course he deserves it. Of course. I mean, where would we be without Oracle, being founded by the CIA and then using an infinite source of fake fiat money to buy up technological properties to copyright them? And try to take over the internet. I mean, where would we be without the genius of Oracle? We'd all be in mud huts eating our own poop without the glorious contributions of the likes of Larry Ellison to our culture. You know, what would we do without them? They're just so smart. They're so clever and good. And that's why they are rewarded here on Earth with, private islands and, whatever else they're into. It's probably disgusting. Thank you so much for the call, Palestinian technocrat. I just wish we were as clever and as good as them. I told the story before, but Like, that's the type of stuff Oracle got into. They tried to buy Java and then copyright it. Java is the thing that the internet is based on. So, like, this whole, like, the whole time Oracle has been around, they're just like this ravenous beast that's just like trying to consume things other people have built so they can, like, control information flow. That's what it always is. Think about that. Basically every mobile game, every mobile platform, the operating systems themselves, every website all runs JavaScript because for years Java gave it out for free. Oracle bought Java and tried to copyright all of it. So they tried to make it to where they owned the internet and they could decide whether or not your website existed by buying Java. Luckily the Supreme Court shut that down, but hey, it's that type of, you know, patriotic contribution to our society that we couldn't live without. Right? I mean, the glorious things that Oracle has accomplished, like, the wonderful contributions to American society that Larry Ellison has brought forth, like, I mean, the things that they built. I mean, the huge, anyway, we'll go out to other calls now. Thanks for calling in. Let's go to Todd in Phoenix on line one. You say there's a new movie that has a crazy end scene that's not appropriate. What movie is this, Todd?
Netflix put out a trailer for a movie called In Your Dreams, and the final scene is just too weird and too suggestive, so it just goes right along with what you were talking about.
Oh, geez, should we show it on air? Is it not even appropriate for that?
Oh, no, it's totally clean enough, but it's just too awkward and suggestive.
Is it
the intent behind it?
Is it the end of the movie or the end of the trailer?
The end of the trailer.
All right, so we're watching the trailer here. Can we bring in the audio, guys? Stevie will say, "Why do you wait?" What? All right, we're gonna pull this in and see what we're talking about here. This is the official trailer of In Your Dreams by Netflix. It looks like a Pixar style animation, computer animation, about a kid that wants to be a magician. It looks like
Stevie will say, "Why do you have to be so?" Okay, we're done here.
Ta-da!
Hey guys. Something came up, and I'm headed out of town super early.
You're leaving?
Dad, it's not like Mom's gonna move, right?
I just don't want you to worry, honey.
Hey, Stevie, look what I found.
What is that? The Legend of the Sandman.
It says the Sandman can make your dreams come true.
It's magic! I can see your crack, Houdini.
Hey, Stevie, what would your dream be?
Dead girl in the cereal.
So it's like a Pixar style movie about dreams.
Where are you?
I'm not Sandman.
Dead.
It can't be. My long lost favorite stuffed animal. Baloney
Tony. I don't see anything wrong with this so far. Let's see where it gets. How much longer are we on this?
Nice.
Is that the very end?
Too, Joanne.
Yeah, that's the end.
That's what I said. Joanne.
Steve.
Joe. And. I feel like we're saying the same thing.
What's happening?
That's Nightmara, the giver of nightmares. You have to get through her if you want to reach the Sandman.
Ooh, scary.
That's going to be expensive.
Children falling out. Now hot dog's eating another hot dog. There's a giant fish. All right, so far I'm not seeing anything particularly offensive.
Take a dream. What's so scary about this?
Oh, absolutely. All right, there it is. I think we found it.
We have a chance.
Is that what you're talking about? The kids walking around naked in the store?
We can find the Sandman. No, the very, very end.
Get behind me. Because
all right, how long is this trailer?
Epic.
We're running out of time here. Oh.
Yeah, way too long.
So, seen good movies lately? Anybody see any good movies?
All right, this is legitimately more offensive to me than the trans stuff.
Who's a good sausage, John?
What a weird kid.
Okay, I think I saw what you were talking about there. Yeah, I think I saw what you were talking about there. Lord. Hey, we're talking about clever people. I mean, the writers are just so clever. You know, it's just, they're so clever. They're so subversive. It's like, wow, how do they, you know, that's why they get paid the big bucks. That's why Netflix makes $500 billion a year. It's, you know, it's high quality content like that. Can you believe it? It's, absolutely incredible. Let's just, cancel Netflix. I think everybody should cancel Netflix. Weird stuff, Todd. Weird stuff indeed. Any final comments about this?
No, dude. That's it. You're doing a great job. Thank you.
Thank you. So creepy. It is so creepy. Let's go to clip 10 here. Line 10, rather. We got Mark in Texas wants to rant. We only got about 2 minutes left in the show, Mark, but you are on the air. Go ahead.
How many seconds do I have?
It's 120.
Oh, thank you. Okay, answer me this. What's the one-way speed of light?
C.
Wrongo, breath moose. Okay, question number two. When did God extinct the dinosaurs there?
Whenever he felt like it.
That's right. 65 million years ago, according to Jonesy, right? The gospel according to you, me. Last one. You ready?
Give it to me.
How many races are there?
How many races are there?
Yeah.
Ooh, good question. One, the human race.
Very good. Created by God, right? About 6 millennia ago. Read Revelation. The answer is in Genesis. Have a good weekend. Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom. Thank you for that. Although, I don't know, I everybody's a human, and, you know, that's a very, powerful statement, but I think God had a favorite race. I think the Old Testament, he really liked certain races and really didn't like others. I'm not sure the God of the Old Testament was quite the, equality lover that, some people will portray him as, but, that doesn't mean, that's why Jesus came, because we're not in that world anymore. That was the old way, and it was necessary then. We are beyond that now. We're in the new age, the age of Christ, the age of our God. That's about going to do it for us here at the War Room. Thanks so much for joining us. InfoWars survives. We live to fight another day. God only knows we'll be here on Monday. I sure hope we will, regardless of what happens between now and then, regardless of what happens next with InfoWars or Alex Jones or myself. You can support me and him and all of us and the crew as well at thealexjonesstore.com, thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison if you want to contribute directly, but make sure to go to alexjonesapp.com, alexjonesapp.com. Download it today. Where are we at, guys? Are we still number one? How high are we on the whole list? Cause I want to take number one of anything, not just on news. We conquer one world and then we move on to conquer the next. We will continue to conquer as long as you go to thealexjonesstore.com. And I'm sure we're running incredible specials. We have awesome new shirts, merchandise, hats, brand new stuff all the time. Is this okay? That's in news. We've been knocked back down to number two. Folks, delete AJN Live and re-download it right now. I'm kidding. Don't do that. Keep it on your phone, but also download it on your iPad. Also steal your sister's phone. Download it on her phone too. We want these numbers up, and it's free. It's easy. It takes 10 seconds and it allows us to dominate. Even just getting to number one is absolutely bombshell. It proves that they cannot kill InfoWars. They cannot even slow us down as long as we have the support and the love of the American people, which we return in kind and times a thousand. We love you all. Thank you all for joining us, and we'll see you on Monday, God willing. Go to thealexjonesstore.com, alexjonesapp.com. Follow me on X at Harrison H. Smith. Follow us at InfoWars, at Real Alex Jones, at AJN Live, and we'll see you all on Monday.
We'll join our regularly scheduled program after these messages.
I saw this a few weeks ago. We got it done. That young girl that is the return of the British queen that fought the Romans, Boudica. Look at this. The West awakens. Look at this badass shirt, ladies and gentlemen. It's got a red InfoWars over the heart on the left, and then it's got her on the back. I designed this shirt. I think it's amazing. The West Awakens 2025. This is a badass shirt, and it literally funds people totally committed to freedom. Then we've got Virtue Signal, and it's the Cracker Barrel symbol right there that we updated there. So we got that. We've also got another, the West Awakens with the hatchet and the butcher knife, ladies and gentlemen.
get them now at thealexjonesstore.com. But what you really want is the ultramethylene blue, the Shilajit, the Irish sea moss, all of it massively discounted, 25% off across the store, apparel, all of it. We've got buy one bottle already discounted, the Shilajit or the Atomic Defense of Beam Boost, and get another bottle half off. The point is, we got war bonds. That's a nice little piece of art you get with my face on it. You get $110 for $100. It's mailed to you as a promo code on it for the site. But everybody that becomes a VIP, $30 a month, it's like being Amazon Prime. You get $40 to spend each month right when you pay that. You cancel any time. Get a special deal, special offer, special sales. I need your support. Wars aren't cheap. So what do good salesmen do? They sell good products. You are insane if you don't get our methylene blue. You are crazy if you don't get our ultimate life force blood detox. It's all there at thealexjonesstore.com. Take action now and get these new limited edition shirts like the F Around Find Out.
Now, back to our program.